It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for the 22nd day of April 2019. A big happy birthday to the darling and the light of my life, Agnes. Yes, it's Agnes's birthday. It's also the birthday of Queen Isabella of Spain and Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. So she's got that going for her. Yep. Happy birthday, Agnes. Every day with you is a day that is, well, in which I am far better than I would otherwise be. So, wanted to start with that. I think I'm safe in saying this. The 22nd day of April 2019 is also the loveliest day in this part of Appalachia thus far. Ah, it was exquisite today. Got up to about 70 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. Grass was green. Berg's out there mowing right now, so you got that whole cut grass thing going on. It's like perfume. You know. Oh, can't beat it. It is Moran Monday. We'll get to that in a moment with a will. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOn.live is where we hang out. If you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, well, by Jove, pop on by, HeadOn.live, click on Chat Room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and find yourself immediately greeted by the likes of Bill and Irish Dave, Jimmy and Otto and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who must be apparently experiencing an equally fine day in Northern California, being as how, since he is a spacing guild master, he has chosen to fold space and become Man Cave. Also, you will be moderated by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, birthday guy, Easter birthday guy, Steve from Georgistan. Happy birthday yesterday, Steve. And so a good time will be had by all in the chat room, I have no doubt. We begin every program with thanks, grateful thanks to our subscribers. And this being a Monday, we have a weekend's worth of thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Michael and Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now in California. Thank you to Bill in Florida. Thank you to Tirani. Thank you to Jamie. Thank you to Joan in Taliban, Indiana. Thank you to our pal at Shadow Mountain. Thank you to Bernice. And thank you to our pal at West Mesa. Thank you to Armand. Thank you to Vincent. And thank you to Dr. John. Thanks to Carl in Ohio. Thank you to Stephen. No, that's Friday. Okay, so, thank you, Stephen, just the same. It was because of Stephen that we're not facing some sort of terrifying, monumental fundraising goal this evening. Let's make that announcement, get that out of the way, and hopefully not talk about it anymore for the rest of the week or the rest of the month. If this evening we can raise $285, well, by Jove, we'll be done with fundraising a day early than we otherwise would have. If we raise $285, six glorious days of fundraising-free radio will begin tomorrow. if $285 comes in like in the next 15, 20 minutes or so, we will have 6 days and 2 hours and whatever of glorious fundraising free radio right here on the Horn. So it's a goal. It's something to look forward to. Yeah. So that's where we stand on that. I hope to make no further mention of it. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that we are rocking and rolling on the Head On live stream, and that White Rose is rolling, but on a degraded bit rate. So we've got that going for us. A little early in the program for phone calls. You know, got to get some stuff out of the way. Got a filibobster to do here, so maybe jump in a little bit later. Not sure. Thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. Happy birthday to the Viking warrior, Pharaoh princess, and photographer extraordinaire. Thank you. Thank you, Darlene. She will be tickled to hear that. And a note to begin the program from Baltimore Bob. It's a dandy. It's a good one. And thought-provoking. So let's take a look. Thank you, Bob, for reading my argument for impeachment on Friday. You said you largely agreed with it, with reservations. You said the mainstream media's obsession with both siderism would mean Trump surrogates would be given inordinate airtime to rebut the charges. Back in 1973, the Watergate hearings canceled all the daytime soap operas. I remember I'd come home from Little League Baseball, and you know what? I didn't care much for soap operas, but the hearings were pretty damned interesting. But the drama was so intense, the ratings were high anyway. In the current age of cable TV, it's possible, if not probable, the hearings would be ghettoized to MSNBC and C-SPAN. Let's not leave CNN out of that mix, but yeah. Baltimore Bob says, I don't share this cynical view because the issues are clear enough for middle America to understand. Most Americans pay taxes, so it's not likely they would give a pass to a privileged rich guy not paying his. Most Americans don't need to launder their money, so they won't give the pig a pass on that either. Sexual harassment and sexual harassment payoffs will together become a soap opera unto itself. The only issue perhaps too abstract for Peoria is emoluments. But the pig's violations of the plain language of the Constitution are so flagrant, it shouldn't take the half-intelligent too long to figure out what conflict of interest means. I, for one, am tired, Bob says, of our government giving Republicans one pass after another. The first was LBJ's failure to publicize Nixon's interference with the Vietnam peace talks during the 1968 presidential campaign. Second was Ford's pardon of Nixon before any criminal charges were filed. Third, the Democratic House failed to charge Reagan for his October surprise hostage deal with Iran during the 1980 presidential campaign. The fourth was all the pardons facilitated by then and now Attorney General Bill Barr of those convicted after the Iran-Contra investigations. And fifth, there was Obama's ho-hum declaration that he wanted to look forward and not backward, despite all the war crimes by the Bush crime family. Do you really think giving Trump a pass will prevent an even worse future president from behaving like him? I don't think I ever said that, and no, I don't. We got to where we are right now precisely because there's been a lack of accountability. So how will this current struggle play out? The day will come, sooner than later, that a certain number of House subpoenas for documents and witnesses will hit a trumped-up legal wall. How can the House exercise its authority? Sorry, I think that was a honeybee. That time of year. Go on, sweetheart. Fly away. So how will this current struggle play out? The day will come, sooner rather than later, that a certain number of House subpoenas for documents and witnesses will hit a trumped-up legal wall. How can the House exercise its authority to impeach if it is prevented from gathering evidence to impeach? When Pelosi realizes investigations can go no further without bringing out the biggest hammer in any toolbox, the moment of truth for our democracy will arrive. That moment of truth is more than a little bit terrifying. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because I'm afraid, just like in 2016, we failed the quadrennial American one-question IQ test, and spectacularly. Well, no, the people didn't fail. The sad, sorry, crummy, miserable, rotten anachronism from our brutal slaver past failed. I'm talking about the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. But a couple of caveats. The subpoenas, which Baltimore Bob raises, are at the top of the stack this evening anyway. The first one being a subpoena issued by Elijah Cummings as the chair of the House Government Oversight and Reform Committee to the Trump Organization's personal accountants. And by personal, I mean, you know, corporation person. Right. It is not brought by Donald Trump in the name of Donald Trump, President of the United States. It's brought by Donald Trump as, you know, just plain old Donald Trump scumbag. Okay? Here's the thing, though. It won't stand. This is one of those lawsuits where a bad client says something like,
I don't care how much it costs me. I just want you to sue the bastards. Wear them out. Stonewall them. Do whatever you have to do. I'm paying by the hour.
Question is, where's the money coming from to pay for it? So, this lawsuit, filed on behalf of the Trump Organization, in regard to an accountant, an accountancy firm, doesn't have anything like national security privilege or executive privilege to protect it at all. And so it's gonna, I'm fairly comfortable saying it's going to lose spectacularly. It'll lose at the district court level because, among other things, the Congress of the United States has been ruled by the courts to have jurisdiction to, among other things, subpoena the urine of a baseball pitcher, Roger Clemens. You might recall that. Mm-hmm. That was just one moment. But the Congress has jurisdiction, broad jurisdiction, in its oversight capacity. And so, one of the things that the perennially butthurt Republicans are already barking about, cranking up the wambulance over, is the fact that, as the suit claims, that it's just a fishing expedition. Well, the Constitution gives the Congress a fishing pole and the tackle box and several hooks and no small number of lures. Although Trump being Trump, if you dangle a skanky $100 bill in the water, he'll swim right up to it. And generally speaking, when an accounting firm gets a subpoena, you know what the accounting firm does? They turn over the records. This is unusual behavior for this accounting firm because they don't have a leg to stand on. But Trump has, I guarantee you, behind the scenes, threatened to sue them too because, well, Trump is a sewer. By the way, there's no such thing as accountant-client privilege while we're at it. No. So, this thing will get bounced out of district court. I guess they're hoping that at some point they can get the case up there to Squee and PJ, Kavanaugh and Ann's boy Neil, and that they can, but in this instance,
there's precedent behind them, because they let the Supreme Court let the subpoenas fly during the great Clinton cleanest hunt. Yeah. And people like Brett Kavanaugh and I believe George Conway were in on the crafting of that legal precedent. Yeah, oops. And by the way, Steve in New York, echoing what I just said, nor is there such a thing as accountant-client privilege, at least in New York. No. And so that's not going to be where the trumped-up wall is. Now, just before airtime, news broke that Gerald Nadler has dropped a subpoena on Don McGahn, former White House counsel. Will this require an assertion of executive privilege? That's possible. What's interesting, though, is that the White House has already waived executive privilege for purposes of the Mueller report. So one could at least argue that once waived, always waived. He's painting himself into a corner, or being painted into one. Donald Trump has never painted nor done any other form of actual labor in his entire miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life. He's kind of pinned. And just as a reminder, yes, Darlene, Trump is a sewer, or S-U-E-R, or a sewer, S-E-W-E-R, a homophone? Why, he might sue you for calling him one of them homophones there, Darlene. Yes, I was thinking more S-E-W-E-R. Mm-hmm. Clarity noting, we lose, and we lose, and we lose, and then we win. Ninth District be damned. Well, in this case, I don't think it's the Ninth District. But it the case, at least on the trial court level, where there will be a more than adequate record established, has been assigned to a district court judge appointed by Barack Obama, which will soon, I'm sure, trigger a declaration by Julius Geezer that's a corrupt judge, it's a bad judge. And see, this particular judge, well, it's not like Judge Curiel, who is of Mexican heritage. This judge's last name is Mehta, M-E-H-T-A, I believe, or M-E-H-T-E-T-I, vowel. And it will be everything, it will require everything in his power not to engage in some sort of sleazy buffoonery, up to and including probably calling the federal judge a, you know, terrorist. McGahn might be a little bit different, but even that instance, it's going to be difficult for him to say, well, you know, I said all of that stuff to to Mueller's team, but I'm not going to say any more to you. Yeah. So that's just a starting place. Because there are many, many more ands. Oh, one thing. I'm going to go ahead and get this out of the way. It might be kind of moranical. But I think we need to clarify this. This was a point that I was trying to get to during Friday on the front porch. It remains germane, mainly in the plane. And that is impeachment itself. Now, I'm kind of glad I didn't get to it on Friday evening, because if I had, I wouldn't have had what I saw this morning while engaging in my filthy early AM habit. They had somebody on, I forget who, to blather away, blather about impeachment being a political choice and not a criminal, yada, yada, yada. We all know that because you pay attention, and we've been talking about this for way over a year. You know, as is always the case, the horn is way out in front of the curve, and in particular, on this one, way, way out in front of the curve. And in the case of impeachment, there was a talk about, you know, whether or not if something rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, high crimes and misdemeanors, as Dr. Bill has told us time and time again, he had another great program this afternoon, by the way. Go over to WhiteRoseSociety.org and sign up on the RSS feed, or I also put it up. We put it up at Podbean every day, too, podbean.com. What is the nature of a republic? Yeah, good stuff, really good stuff. But I even had Dr. Bill on the program a couple of months back to talk about just exactly what the framers, you know, the guys who spelled Congress, Congriff, what they meant by high crimes and misdemeanors. And Dr. Bill was more than passing brilliant, as is his wont. But at the end of the day, high crimes and misdemeanors are political things. Now, it can also be treason and bribery, because those two words exist in the same clause, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. But high crimes and misdemeanors are left, and this is important, to the definition of Congress. If, in fact, they are informed by the historical meaning of high crimes and misdemeanors from the 18th century and from the Old English common law, so be it. But there's not a list, and that's what's important here. There's not a list. And it would have been beneficial this morning had they had someone on to explain that, but, well, I guess the bookers there at Morning Joe don't know any of those folks, even though they had John Meacham on there, and you'd think he would know. But instead, they went wandering off into the weeds. But what I was going to say Friday night is, this past, is that as annoying as it was back in the 90s, you kind of have to come to the realization that impeachment is a prerogative that is constitutionally granted to the House. And yes, the House really does have the constitutional prerogative to impeach over a blowjob. They do. They've got the constitutional prerogative to determine that telling a fib about whether you got said blowjob is an impeachable offense, maybe a misdemeanor. Because if you were to go back and ask those goobers whether it was a high crime, and if they said yes, well, then the Mueller report, for all that it isn't, is certainly replete with at least 10 instances of, well, you know, high crimes. But the framers made clear that high crimes and misdemeanors are whatever the House says they are, as far as bringing the initial impeachment. Now, the Senate gets a say-so, too, because it takes a two-thirds majority vote, which was a hell of a lot easier to achieve in 1787 than it is in 2019, because there were in 1787, what, maybe 14, 15 states? Maybe not even that yet. Was Kentucky, were Kentucky and Tennessee in yet? Alabama wouldn't come along until 1819. Ohio? No. But you get Maine got carved out of what? New Hampshire? Something? Not sure. But two-thirds was a lot easier to reach back then. But it wasn't so easy to reach that it would be a slam dunk. So we need to, yes, come to terms with the fact that the Republican House may not have been in the wrong to impeach Bill Clinton for telling a fib about, well, a blowjob. Okay? I mean, it just is what it is. And so it was a little bit gratifying to me earlier today when I saw a tweet from a most intelligent man. It was back on, well, Friday, when Lawrence O'Donnell said House Republicans impeached Bill Clinton. Then Republicans won the House again in the next election. And Republicans won the Senate again. And Republicans won the White House. It's a political myth that the Clinton impeachment hurt Republicans. Once again, if you are a long-standing member of this community, you know that that's something that I've been saying for years. Not just last Friday night. Years. It was like a sort of vaccination, if you will. Because the House knew that they were not going to remove Bill Clinton, but they wanted to exercise it because they thought that they were going to damage his presidency, which was already damaged enough as it was because he had a hostile Congress. There wasn't going to be any legislation get through that the Republicans didn't agree to. But they hated Bill Clinton so much that when he screwed up, or screwed in, they leapt at the opportunity to impeach him. And no, it didn't cost them a damned thing. Because, remember, friends, I-O-K, I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. So it was, like I said, it was gratifying to see that Lawrence O'Donnell had reached that conclusion as well. So I'm... I hate these false binaries, these false dichotomies that the multimillionaire for-profit media are constantly trying to shoehorn us into. Well, you know, you can have investigations, but you can't. But if you have investigations, you can't have impeachment. Or you can have impeachment, but you can't have investigations. It's, oh, well, you've got to have an impeachment committee or the judiciary and oversight. Harumph. Bullshit. The House of Representatives can go about its business and do exactly what it's doing. I, for one, would not want to begin impeachment proceedings with half a record. Anybody who's ever tried a case knows that all along the way, part of the maddening minutiae of lawyering is to make sure that you are making a record all along the way. If something gets said and you don't object, lawyer, well, you've waived that objection on appeal. You can't say, "Well, I'm sorry, I was reaching in my pocket for a piece of Nicorette." No, you object. Hearsay come, you hear some hearsay, you don't object, you waive the hearsay on appeal. And you don't want to go into another level of the proceeding with a half a record. Because remember, Mueller's charge, Mueller's brief, was limited in scope. And because he was not operating under the independent counsel statute that the Republicans let die as quickly as they possibly could so that it could never be used against one of theirs, you know, George W. Bush, scumbag in the office now, Mueller operated under a different set of rules. If you recall back during the Clinton era, there was an independent counsel statute that had come out of the previous couple of decades, and it created a truly independent prosecutor with no one but a supervising judge. There was no deputy assistant attorney general supervising Ken Starr. He just wandered over to some loony-ass Federalist Society judge and said, "Hey, yeah, I know I started out on a busted land deal, but I found this woman named Linda Tripp, and she's talked another woman who has a blue dress with a jizz stain on it into talking to me. Can I expand my investigation? I think that Clinton got a blowjob, and I want to spend $70 million investigating it." And the judge just said, "Well, Kenny, you just go and you investigate to your little heart's content, son." And he hired an eager up-and-comer by the name of Brett Kavanaugh, who, for all we know, was still drinking beer with PJ and Squee back then. Yeah. And away they went. Well, those things did not apply to Mueller, so when they locked Mueller into investigating whether there was any untoward contact between Russians and the Trump campaign, that's pretty much where he had to camp out. But what I said about not going into impeachment with a half a record, well, look at what Representative Chairman Cummings has done. He's looking into a fraud perpetrated with the collusion. Oop, there's that word. Okay, let's not ever use that word again. How about we try a new one on for size? How's about, being practitioners of the art of word knowing, how's about connivance? Because the Trump Organization and Donald Trump, with the connivance of Deutsche Bank, apparently inflated his financial worth because he had a hard-on, tiny and mushroom-shaped, to buy the Buffalo Bills. Because, you remember back when Dim Leader was president of the United States? We have these Republicans who keep finding themselves in the Oval Office, despite their best intentions not to get there. All George W. Bush ever wanted to be was commissioner of Major League Baseball. And there are at least a million Iraqi civilians who, if they weren't so fucking busy being dead, would really like to have for him to have gotten his lifelong dream. I mean, how much can you fuck up baseball? I mean, sure, a lot, but not to the tune of a million dead Iraqis. And going all the way back to the USFL days, all Donald Trump ever wanted to do was be a football team owner and bask in the reflected glory of all those muscular, studly men. And so that's what Chairman Cummings is going after. And then there's the emoluments. And then there's all the Russian stuff and the skeevy, shady land deals. And if you're gonna, you don't hunt an elephant, or in the case of Trump, a beached fucking whale, with a BB gun. You bring the high caliber stuff, and you use it all.
and you bury him in it, and you make all of his people spend all of their time asking questions of themselves like, am I willing to go to prison for this motherfucker? I dare say there's probably something jurisdictional in every single committee of the House of Representatives where they could go after something sleazy, skeevy, dodgy, and filthy that Donald Trump has done, and I think it would be Jim Damn Dandy if they all did. Because it's obviously driving him bonkers. Scott in San Diego, impeachment Scalia style. Maybe we should take a page from old fat dead Tony and put on our originalist caps. Let's do impeachment, but only allow the House members from the 13 or whatever number of states as existed when impeachment was invented. I kind of sort of think that Trump wouldn't exactly fare well under that head count. Well, I mean, that's your Georgia, your North Carolina, your South Carolina, your Virginia, your Delaware, your Maryland, your Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York. Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, and New Hampshire? Have I got the count right? I wasn't using my fingers. it's not like there's a live, I mean, there's a live audience, but it's not like I can hear the laughter or anything, so I got a cowbell for Darlene here. Should I take this thing this far? I apologize ahead of time, but I can't resist. You're really going for the homophones tonight. Kavanaugh's an up-and-comer against Clinton, up-and-comer. Oh, I must get my mind out of the gutter. I disgust myself. But I'm having a good laugh at least. Okay, Maine was... what's that? Maine was part of Massachusetts. Yeah, that's what I thought. But what about New Hampshire then? Was New Hampshire part of Massachusetts too? Like I said, I wasn't counting on my fingers. Now I got to count on my fingers. God damn. Georgia, North No, Vermont came along later, right? good. Scott in San Diego. Sleazy, skeevy, dodgy, and filthy. Trump's new defense team? Yep. So, just going, and all of this comes from what... Bob in Baltimore was talking about. I think that we can safely suggest that doing both things is a good idea. And it's only because of the stylized approach that we take to impeachment that we wind up at the notion that it'll take, you know, 11 jillion months to do it. If all these other committees develop all of their evidence and then hand it off to a select committee on impeachment, it'll be over in a couple of weeks because the legwork will have already been done. Now, the accountant subpoena is interesting enough. But the subpoena to Don McGahn is pretty good, too. Produce the things attached on the identified on the attached schedule, touching matters of inquiry committed to said committee, or subcommittee, and if you're not, and you are not to depart without leave of said committee or subcommittee.
Oh, dear. That sounds serial. You want to know what they want to know from Don McGahn? Because if anybody has read this, because, you know, remember, Julius Geezer can barely read. If anybody's read this to him, he's raging. In accordance with the attached definitions and instructions, you are hereby required to produce all documents and communications in your possession, custody, or control, referring or relating to, one, statements by Michael Flynn to the Federal Bureau of Investigation regarding contacts with Sergei Kislyak, two, the Federal Bureau of Investigation and Department of Justice's investigation of Michael Flynn, meetings with Department of Justice officials or employees relating to Michael Flynn, and underlying evidence relating to Michael Flynn, the resignation or termination of Michael Flynn, Sean Spicer's February 14, 2017 public statements about Michael Flynn's resignation. Because remember, Don McGahn took notes, and Julius Geezer said, why are you taking all those notes? I had a great lawyer, Roy Cohn. He never took notes. President Trump's contacts with James Comey on or about January 27, 2017, February 14, 2017, March 30, 2017, and April 11, 2017. The termination of Comey, including but not limited to any documents or communications relating to draft termination letters, White House counsel memoranda, or the May 9, 2017 Rod Rosenstein memorandum to Jeff Sessions entitled Restoring Public Confidence in the FBI. Meetings or communications involving Federal Bureau of Investigation or Department of Justice officials or employees relating to the resignation or termination of James Comey. Jeff Sessions' recusal from any matters arising from the campaigns for President of the United States. Reversing or attempting to reverse Jeff Sessions' recusal from any matters. The resignation or termination, whether contemplated or actual, of Jeff Sessions. The resignation or termination, whether contemplated or actual, of Rod Rosenstein. Oh, this is some fun lawyer drafting. The resignation or termination, whether contemplated or actual, of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Your resignation or termination, whether contemplated or actual. The appointment of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Alleged conflicts of interest on the part of the Special Counsel Robert Mueller or other employees of the Special Counsel's office. And that's page one. It goes all the way down to page two and a third. And number 36 is a real Lulu. Any documents referenced in the report. It also seeks things relating to activities by the Southern District of New York. This will be resisted strenuously. But the question becomes, was McGahn his personal lawyer? Or was he White House counsel? That will make a difference. McGahn was White House counsel. And that means he's counsel for the White House, the institution of the presidency, not Donald Trump's personal consigliere. Okay, we finally got it sorted out. Thank you, Bruce. Vermont was part of New York, and Maine was part of Massachusetts. New Hampshire was an original state. Still trying to figure out how you get... Can you get to Maine from Massachusetts without going through New... I know nothing about New England. I'm sorry. The only thing I know about New England was that the Confederacy wanted to dig a ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. Smart folks, those Confederates. That's a joke. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Flavio says, that law firm? Skeevy et al. Skeevy, sleazy, dodgy, and filthy. That's almost as good as Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, Flavio says. Well, their operators are standing by. It ain't a free call. No, not even a little bit. I hope that we've kind of put together a picture of where this is all going. Because where it's going is not going to be a pleasant time. And look, I frankly do not care how many hissies Trump has, assuming that everybody can keep him away from the nuclear buttons. There's, you know, where there's smoke, where there's fire. Well, there's a ton of smoke here. And I would like for us not to get in such a frenzy that we leave any of the smoke ignored, lest there be any burning embers left to catch later. And strictly from an efficiency standpoint, if you go and set up a Senate Select Committee on impeachment and make them do all the work that all these committees can do, well, that's how you get into a two-year-long process. If, however, you let all the committees do their separate work and then you bring it all to marshal the evidence it together into one committee, it becomes a much more viable process. Or it seems so to me. And apparently that is the thinking that is motivating Nancy Pelosi as well. I know, it started again. Goddamn establishment mainstream, goddamn Nancy Pelosi. Yay. Well, she's written a letter. She wrote it today. She wrote it to the members of her caucus, whom she leads. And she said, as you know, last Thursday's release of the redacted Mueller report has caused a public outcry for truth and accountability. Since its release, our committees of jurisdiction and their staffs have spent the holiday weekend reviewing its contents. Our country is well served by the exceptional leadership of our chairs to seek the truth for the American people. While we do not have the full report and the underlying exhibits, including the grand jury testimony, two of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's conclusions stand out. One, the sweeping and systematic Russian interference in our elections. And two, the president's repeated efforts to thwart cooperation with the independent prosecutors in their pursuit of justice. As to Mueller's conclusion regarding Russian interference in our election, House Democrats have led the way to strengthen our democracy with the early passage of H.R. 1. We talked about that. The For the People Act addresses the sweeping election protection, ethics reforms, and voting rights protections that the public has demanded to ensure that each voter has an equal voice and that their voices are counted as cast. We continue to urge our Senate colleagues to take up these reforms. You may recall that chinless Mitch McConnell referred to H.R. 1 as the Democrat Protection Act. Dick. And in light of the president's defenders arguing in defense of receiving and weaponizing stolen emails, we continue to press our Republican House counterparts to take up our pledge to refuse to use stolen, hacked, or falsified information in campaigns because the American people deserve honest debate. As to the president's conduct, we will scrupulously assert Congress's constitutional duty to honor our oath of office to support and defend the Constitution and our democracy. That includes honoring the Article I responsibility of the legislative branch to conduct oversight over other branches of government, unified in our search for the truth and in upholding the security of our... Damn it, I hate that. Missing a word. Of our elections. Sorry. And this part's important. While our views range from proceeding to investigate the findings of the Mueller report or proceeding directly to impeachment, we all firmly agree that we should proceed down a path of finding the truth. If I had been in the drafting of this, I would have said finding the facts. But I wasn't, so there you have it. It is also important to know that the facts regarding, that's probably why they didn't use facts, but sometimes you can use the same word twice in two sentences consecutively. It is also important to know that the facts regarding holding the president accountable can be gained outside of impeachment hearings. As we proceed to uncover the truth and present additional needed reforms to protect our democracy, we must show the American people we are proceeding free from passion or prejudice, strictly on the presentation of fact. Ooh, it did get used a second time. Because we still have not seen the full Mueller report, I have enclosed the bicameral letter Democratic leaders sent rejecting Attorney General Barr's effort to provide the remainder of the report to only a few members of Congress and only in a classified setting. We insist on the public's right to know so that the American people can learn the truth and Congress can make our decision on how to proceed. Whether currently indictable or not, it is clear that the president has, at a minimum, engaged in highly unethical and unscrupulous behavior, which does not bring honor to the office he holds. That is the understatement of 2019 thus far. It is also clear that the congressional Republicans have an unlimited appetite for such low standards. Ooh, that's going to leave a mark. The GOP should be ashamed of what the Mueller report has revealed instead of giving the president their blessings. Now, this refers to something that happened about an hour and 54 minutes ago. Maybe it's still ongoing. Today at 5 p.m., we'll have a conference call for our chairs to report on the status of their review of the redacted Mueller report, their request for the full report, and underlying exhibits, and discuss what comes next. I like this part. Today is also Earth Day, where we sadly see Republicans' continued denial of the climate crisis and active efforts to roll back our hard-fought environmental protections. When we return to Washington, we will continue to move forward with our Climate Action Now Act, H.R. 9, to uphold the Paris Climate Accord and lay the foundation for more bold action. United in purpose, we must make the Republican denial face the reality of what the Trump administration is doing to our natural environment and our constitutional environment, and act with the boldest common denominator to repair the damage and build a better future. With the hope that you had a happy Easter or a joyful Passover, I thank you for the leader. I thank you for your leadership for the people. Best regards, Nancy Pelosi. She just signs her name Nancy. How is that not a rock-solid tactical approach? Now, she didn't say everything I just said, but it is. It is a rock-solid tactical approach. Have the committees do their work, and then marshal the evidence, and if the evidence supports it, I know you think it does, I know I think it does, then convene a special select committee on impeachment. And go from there. It seems the only... Don't want to go off half-cocked. You know why we have that saying? For people who aren't particularly familiar with firearms. If you go off half-cocked, that means you really don't go off at all. That's that moment when you hear click and nothing happens. If they're going to go off at all, they dare not misfire. And this being Moran Monday, I recognize that I got to be careful with what I'm saying, or it could be that Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags will have another hissy. Yes, she's one of our Morans today.
She went to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda today and got her pogo stick out and leapt right up on the cross.
No collusion and no obstruction. That message plan didn't work, so now it's like, what do we do?
Right.
It's simply sad.
Good point. Okay, Sarah, on Friday, April Ryan from CNN actually kind of mentioned you. We're going to play that soundbite and get your reaction.
The American people can't trust her. They can't trust what's said from the president's mouthpiece, spokesperson, from the People's House. Therefore, she should be let go. She should be fired. When there is a lack of credibility there, you have to start lopping the heads off.
So she was talking about how you had lied to the press, and then later it's time to, you know, start firing people. We had your dad on about an hour ago. He was steamed. Curious about your reaction.
Look, I've had reporters say a lot of things about me. They've said I should be choked. They said I should deserve a lifetime of harassment, but certainly never had somebody say that I should be decapitated. This takes us to a new low, even for the liberal media. I think it just once again proves why this journalist isn't taken seriously.
That's where she fucked up, because April Ryan is taken seriously. She's taken very seriously. Use the word very. And under the Mark Twain style book, she's taken damned seriously. Among other things, she's the 2017 Journalist of the Year by the National Association of Black Journalists. The Reporters Committee on Freedom of the Press gave her its 2019 Freedom of the Press Award. Seriously is how April Ryan is taken. Not seriously is how Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags just is. But now she's running around. Ooh, April Ryan's going to lop my head off. She's kind of a member of ISIS or something. Yeah. Fuck off, Sarah. Right off. Okay, getting back to our geography quiz of the evening. Maine was not contiguous with Massachusetts. There's a 16-mile stretch of New Hampshire Atlantic coast between Maine and Massachusetts. That from Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. I think there's so much concrete in New York, it's kind of hard to eat dirt and run rabbits, but I'm guessing Steve is, I don't know, maybe he gnawed a dandelion out from between a sidewalk crack somewhere. New low? Are you fucking kidding me? I know my question is essentially rhetorical, but have these people no fucking shame? No, not a molecule. Well, that's true. Jack in Shreveport pointing out Les Nessman always goes off fully cocked. Meanwhile, Elbert in Rhode Island, one of the original 13, we're pretty sure about that. I'm waiting to see if the IRS will hand over Dope 45's tax records. They are obligated by federal law to do so. Maybe it'll explain why Trump scored a 715th ranking on the recent Forbes billionaires list. Ooh, he broke. He real broke. By the way, I neglected to mention the name of the accounting firm that got the subpoena from Representative Cummings. Mazars. Mazars, M-A-Z-A-R-S. They asked nicely first. They sent him a letter last week about complying with a House subpoena. And then Mazars reported that, have no legal issue to, we can't turn all this stuff over without a subpoena. Okay, here's a subpoena. Oh, we're going to need a court order. Okay, you can have one of those, too. Maybe after that, somebody can go after their ability to be a going concern. Because I'm not an accountant, and I don't play one on the radio. But I did see someone who is an accountant earlier today make the remark, you know what I do when they bring a subpoena to me? I give them the goddamn records, because I like being an accountant. Ta-da! be nice if some tasty little Rule 11 sanctions could be imposed on whoever the pettifoggers are who brought this one. And we do have some top-notch morons this evening. And it'll even include a musical interlude that'll probably screw up the YouTube file. And, by the way, at the beginning of the program, I mentioned that there is a $285 challenge on the table. And we have a way of closing that gap. Charlene in Rhode Island, a charter member of the Sorority of Leans, has put up a $100 challenge. So that means if there are 10 with 10 bucks, or 5 with 20 bucks, or 20 with 5 bucks, or another person with 100 bucks, or whatever, if we can raise 100 bucks, then that'll wipe out all but 85 bucks for the month of April, and we'll be oh so close to fundraising free radio for the remainder of the month. I yearn for those fundraising free radio days. You've no idea. So it's out there. $100 challenge, courtesy of Charlene in Rhode Island. Pretty please, let's knock that one out. Thanks. And Charlene thanks you as well. Yeah, Monique says, isn't it something these people who are clean as newly fallen snow won't show any of their records? Huh. Yeah, how's about that? Wonder what could possibly be making them so nervous. And at this point in time, I'm satisfied to say that it's a race now. It's a race between Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump to see which one of them actually tears their clothes off first on live TV. Although I give the inside rail to Giuliani when it comes to biting the head off a live animal on television. Yesterday, I was just absolutely certain yesterday that Rudy Giuliani either had a bat or maybe a baby rabbit from Easter Sunday in his pocket. He's gone. There may be a reason for it. And at some point in time, maybe somebody, who knows, maybe somebody already is, grand jury secrecy and all that, looking into his sketchy overseas money-making efforts. All right. This is awesome. Courtesy of Darlene and Ralps. Darlene says, I'll put in 50. And Ralps knocked out 10 of it, so 40 bucks more, and we're done with Charlene's challenge. Darlene says, as a lean, I'll put in 50 bucks toward Charlene's challenge. The sorority rules. Look, now, I'm not going to impose here, but y'all need to design like a crest and stuff, okay? And I'll leave it to the artistic or the artistic minded to do that. But, you know, you're going to need a crest and a secret handshake. And yeah. So thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Darlene. 40 bucks and we're done. Okay, somebody is on hold over on the stress line. Let's find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, happy Monday to you. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia, again.
What's happening,
and
Reggie?
You mentioned Fox just now, and it's a warm, beautiful day, Monday, by the way, over here in Decatur, Georgia, where I live. It's a beautiful spring Monday. The wind's not blowing as much, and it's warm, too. So you brought up Fox, because they had Sarah Sanders crying over what April Ryan said, which I'm sure she didn't mean that way literally, you know, she meant that figuratively and proverbially. But you know that conservative talk radio ran with it. And she actually literally meant it there was something said she'd be chopped, she'd be decapitated, like Alice in Wonderland, you know, off with her head. And she cried to her dear daddy who attacked April Ryan, and she fought back. They attacked each other on Twitter, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, why don't you go back to living with her daddy? Or have, you know, if she loves, you know, if he's overprotecting her that much, why don't you go back there and live with him? If she's crying so much, why don't you go back there and live with him, you know? Is she that vulnerable? I thought she was supposed to be a full, independent, full-grown, mature, rational adult.
No, she's a Republican. She's a maggot.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Why is she crying? Why is she pulling the V card, victimhood card? You know?
Well, it
why is she pulling the V card?
Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, Reggie.
Right. And speaking of which, last time we were talking about Fox News, I asked you last week, how do you feel about Bernie Sanders just obliterating them over there at the town hall news conference meeting that they had over there? How do you feel about that? When they asked him those stupid-ass questions and he just threw right back at him.
And what I said is that I think there's an element of the Fox audience that's a natural for Bernie.
Yeah, why you say that, Bob? Why exactly do you say that, Bob?
Well, because, for instance, I saw some polling data earlier today.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like to rely on polling data, but it's news,
right.
And it is what it is. Anywhere between 19% and 26% of Bernie voters polled, 26% of them said they, by God, will not vote for the Democratic nominee for president if it's Elizabeth Warren and not Bernie. 19%
right.
of them said they absolutely will not vote for the Democratic nominee if it's Beto O'Rourke and not Bernie. The weird thing about it, though, is that 5% of those surveys said that they will not vote for Bernie if Bernie is the nominee. And this was a poll directed specifically toward Bernie supporters. So make of that what you will. Maybe that 5% who won't vote for Bernie if Bernie is the nominee, who are yet Bernie supporters. Right. Maybe they are just the living embodiment of the margin of error, Reggie.
Right, and you said that last week. You also said that
I didn't bring that up last week, Reggie, because the poll only came out in the last day or so.
Well, they said that. Well, you know, liberals were pissed off at him for going over to Fox News and giving them, shall we say, life support. Fox News channel, that is, because we thought Fox News would be on its proverbial last legs, if you will. But they were pissed off that he went over there to even debate with them or entertain the thought, let alone actually debating them, you know. But he went over there because he wanted to. Hell, he's Bernie Sanders. He can debate
sure he can. And like I said, there's an element of the Fox viewing base that he probably has a natural sort of affinity with. I mean, if it was just they were going to vote for the Democratic nominee and then it was over, they probably of all the Democrats they'd probably vote for Bernie. Now what'll probably happen though, Reggie, is something similar to what happened here in West Virginia in 2016. And I've mentioned this time after time after time because I want people to sort of internalize it and understand it all the way down to their toenails. In 2016. Trump came to West Virginia, and he put on a miner's helmet, and he did his WWE bicep flex or whatever that is. And he said,
"Okay, when the primary comes, I want you to all go and vote for Bernie. Don't vote for me. Vote for Bernie,
right,
so he can win the primary."
Right.
And then
right.
vote for me in the general election.
And that's what happened.
Right. Right. And
so
then,
I want to make sure you get the point of this.
Oh.
There are people who will vote for Bernie and then turn around and vote for Trump.
Right. Right.
Because Bernie talks a populist message and Trump talks a populist message. Now, in Trump's case, it's entirely a goddamn lie.
Right. And but you said the for-profit media was pissed off for Adam for going over to Fox News Channel in the first place instead of coming to them.
No. What I said was that Fox was looking at having one of its worst financial reporting periods, and that kind of saved them.
Yeah, it did save them. Yeah, that kind of saved them. But with, that kind of saved them. But would the rest of the media would be, would they be pissed off if he did that for them, if they were on their last leg? Like,
what's your point there? I'm getting a little lost.
Well, you know, if he had a town hall meeting over there, and they were financially going bankrupt, you know, on their last leg, and all of a sudden he came around and saved them, you know, would they be pissed off then? Would Fox be mad at them?
Probably.
Oh, probably. Would Fox be mad at them? Yeah, I guess they would be mad at them. Like I said, he can debate anybody he wants. You know, he's Bernie Sanders. I mean, would they say that about Hillary Clinton? She went over there and debate them if she wanted to. Or Joe Biden. Kelly, Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris or the rest of them. You think they say the same thing to them, Bob?
Well, they've got a, you know, the Democratic National Committee has said in no uncertain terms to Fox, no, we'll take a powder on having a Democratic debate on Fox.
Right.
And people like Joe Scarborough said, oh, that's a terrible idea. They all need to go to Fox. And like I said, if you're working in local radio and you're telling people to go and listen to your competition, the GM is going to haul your little disc jockey ass in on the carpet and say, don't do that ever again.
Right. 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 That'd be true. Well, you'd be fired, right, Bob? You'd be fired.
Well, you might be invited to go work for the other side if you think they're so fine.
Yeah. I mean, has it ever happened to you, Bob, when you were on radio?
I've been called in on the carpet on a number of things.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry to hear that, Bob.
Why?
I'm so sorry to hear that.
If you're not pushing the envelope, if you're not pushing the envelope, you're not doing it right.
So if you're not taking risks, you're not independent.
No, I got thrown off the air over in America's fifth smallest radio market, specifically because I went after Massey Energy, the people who were blowing up people's homes.
Right.
But they were an advertiser, by God.
Right. And they didn't take too kindly of you criticizing them.
No, not at all. No.
Even in the station.
They also didn't like it when I referred to one of the insurance advertisers as Snake Farm.
Right.
Or one of the competing insurance companies as All Snake.
Right. State Farm and Allstate. Right. Because you were screwing with their profits, the station and those advertising commercials. Right, Bob? You're messing up their cash flow. And they didn't like
I was also doubling their ratings.
You were?
Yeah.
You were. Well, at least you took a chance and a risk. At least you took some chances and risks. Other mainstream radio and TV talk show hosts won't even do that. Well, a handful would, but most of them wouldn't. No, because they still work for the big corporate company. Right, Bob? I mean, they're not like you and Nicole. Randy.
The dollar's king.
Yeah, the dollar's king. But you, Nicole, and Randy have your own radio talk show. You run them yourselves, and you're the bosses.
No. I'm not the boss. I am not the boss here. There's a committee of the bosses, headed by one Agnes, and then there's the community that we have here that are the real bosses. Because y'all are the ones who make the determination as to whether this program remains on the air or not.
Yeah, but you're able to say exactly what you want to say and get away with it without FCC breathing down your neck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, I didn't say anything that the FCC could have gotten upset about when I said that Massey was poisoning people.
Right.
But what I did do, however,
was offend the general manager's general lust for money. And he liked cashing those Massey ad checks.
Right. Well, he couldn't do that anymore because you were going to...
No. They told him that they would be more than happy to keep writing those checks, and they'd even write him an extra big one if he'd make sure I was out of there by July the 1st.
So they wanted him to fire you.
Yeah, and they did.
Right?
And they did.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. All right, what did you say about that afterwards? Did you say good riddance?
No, I was pissed.
What did you say after? Oh, you was pissed. But you moved on, right?
Well, yeah, this doesn't happen without that. Now, see, I probably never should have said what I said, Reggie, because James just wrote from Illinois and said, since I'm your boss, get me a beer. I'll get right on the road, James. You want one of our little local brews? The Crux is out now, and I highly recommend it. And I'll even put it in a growler for you and deliver it by hand.
Right. Like you said, you was pissed from the beginning, but you picked yourself up, dusted yourself off, and moved on.
Well, there's a whole lot more goes into it than that, but yeah, it boils down to that.
But other radio talk shows are too afraid to even go up against their own corporations that fund them, you know, their own best interest.
Well, that's because look, most of the electronic media and print media, for that matter, in this country, are owned by a tiny handful of corporations that are right wing in nature, Reggie.
Yeah,
that's why, and it's so funny because every time. Liberal progressive radio has been allowed on the air in a market, it whips the shit out of right wing radio, and then immediately the corporation will turn around and say, well, you know, we're going, hey, your progressive flickering candle flame is going to be changing format to Mexican Mormon ping pong radio. And then all the progressive voices go away, and it's a Mexican Mormon ping pong radio station with a lot of kapik, 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 caramba, kapik, kapik, kapik.
Yeah. Who needs another sports or music radio, right, Bob? That's what they're going through, right?
Yeah, but they're Reggie, they're creating loss leaders. They have to lose. If you've got a station that's making money, it's better if you've got another station that's losing money.
Oh, man. Who wants to lose money?
Anybody who would otherwise pay a shit ton of taxes.
Oh, right. So, like you said, whatever progressive radio appears and kicks the shit out of conservative talk radio, like such as Flush Flimball, for example, they have to change the rules, you know, change the game, so to speak.
Yeah, because that progressive radio station was not put up there to make money, let alone to whip the ass off of Sean Hannity in the damn book. I don't even think there's a book anymore. But, yeah. Hey, Reggie, I gotta roll on, brother, but it's good to hear from you, man. I hope you have another good day down there. I think we got one more nice day of sunshine tomorrow, and then the heavens open up, and it turns into monsoon season again. Damn, it's wet.
Right, well,
but I live in a rainforest. I should expect it.
Right. Well, hopefully Mike Huckabee doesn't threaten April Ryan, because she said in her tweet, if he comes after her and her people, I mean her and my people, being black people, if he comes after me and mine, you and the Trump administration will be held accountable for it. You know.
Well, look, April's a grown up. She's been getting death threats from the maggots for a while now, and the only thing you can do is keep doing your job.
Yeah, but he came after her first, and she responded to him. That she said he threatened her not too long ago.
Oh yeah, sure, but that's what I'm saying. They're not going to stop. Okay, they're just not.
Yeah, but what would it take for them to stop? Somebody being killed?
No, they won't stop then either. It, Reggie. It's good business, man. It's great messaging. It gets Emery and Marvelline and the likes all stirred up there in the Barca loungers.
Yeah, they like the Terminator. They won't stop until you're dead, until you're all dead, right?
They won't stop until they have consolidated power absolutely, completely, and totally, and we all live under their heel.
No, And that's tyrannical. That's tyranny. That's dictatorship. Isn't that why we got rid of Hitler and the rest of them? That's tyrannical dictatorship.
Well, that, but that's a different dictatorship. This is
right.
You understand, Reggie. Have yourself a good evening, man. Take care.
All right. You too, Bob.
All right. Later now.
All right.
That's our buddy Reggie calling from Atlanta. Let's run over to the. Oh, by the way, thank you to Elizabeth. Thank you very kindly. Let's decipher in. We got $15 to go on Charlene's challenge, and after that, there's only $85 more to go, and we're done with fundraising for the month of April. Hallelujah. Speaking of Aprils. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I don't mean to get all old geezer on you.
Well, you're not going to get much of anything on me at all if we don't do something about your levels.
How do you mean?
I mean, I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, wait, what the hell is this? Stand
well,
by
one of us made it better.
Is it okay now?
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird. I had the phone in my pocket because I'm fixing a cup of instant coffee. How about now?
I have a feeling phones that are in pockets don't work as well as phones that aren't.
All right. How about now?
No, you're awesome.
All right. Well, I'll just hold it.
Okay. Or set set it on the table there next to your Sanka.
You're welcome. No, it's taster's choice.
Wait a minute. That's, yeah, okay, for the Sanka. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it used to get me. You remember Robert Young, the actor who was on Father Knows Best and
sure.
The writer Marcus Welby?
Yes.
And then after he didn't have a series anymore, he did Sanka commercials. And the way the commercials were orchestrated, he would be like behind the refrigerator off to the side to where the woman walking in the kitchen couldn't see him. And she'd be drinking her coffee, standing there in the kitchen, complaining about the caffeine level in her coffee. And, you know, he'd pop out from wherever he was kind of hiding and say, "Why so jumpy?" You know, and she'd throw the coffee in the air and faint dead away and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But he was, at that time, he was pitching, you're welcome, Chirps, was pitching, Sanka coffee. So anyway.
Yeah, that ad, you know, it just goes to show you how much times have changed because that'd probably get him a restraining order now.
Yeah, and you know who else used to barge into domiciles without knocking? Was it Mrs. Olson?
That old bat,
Who did was it Folgers coffee, I guess? I don't know. I'm going too far back. But speaking of going too far back, I remember a time when radio stations that had talk shows or talk segments in their programming day would always, at the top of the hour, at the top of the show, would run a little disclaimer. The opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of this station, the advertisers, or staff and management, verbiage along those lines. It doesn't sound like your station there in West Virginia.
Oh, no, they ran it. They ran it.
Oh, but when it came down to the bucks
yeah.
and the billing, never mind that disclaimer.
Right.
Okay. All right. I get it.
I remember looking at him and saying, you know, one of these days, and we'll leave his name out, and I said, one of these days, blank, you're going to grow a spine.
Yeah.
And you're going to be so surprised when you do, because it'll allow you to do things that'll make you feel so real and so clean and so alive, like looking at somebody and say, oh, okay, go advertise on the other news talk station. Wait a minute, there isn't one in this market. Fuck you and your money.
Well,
and then they beg
been...
you. No, but then they beg you to take their money.
Yeah. Thinking back on it, it has been my experience that general managers, as a food group, are somewhat squishy in the spine department. And I'm going by them chronologically in my head. And I don't think there's an exception to that observation. It's very strange. Very strange. They want listeners. They want listeners who are listening. They want listeners who are listening and engaged. You know, but when you program toward that end, they get all, you know, it's the weirdest damn thing. You know, and you talk about a Mexican Mormon ping pong station. The last station I worked at in Kansas City at the time, late 80s, early 90s, was owned by Bonneville. So you may as well say it was owned by the Mormon Church. And, you know, the reason they gave me for letting, you know, inviting me to go away was I was my program on the weekend was not, it didn't fit with the rest of the shows during the broadcast week. Now, that doesn't mean that I was breaking format badly. In my mind, what that meant was my numbers on Sunday mornings were somewhat better, measurably better than what the station was doing during the week. You know, so I don't know. I've pretty much purged all that from my memory banks, other than what I've recounted here, because it's like, you know, why relive it?
I don't ever want to forget it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember the lesson from it, but the politics of it and the personalities of it, you know, and the skirmishes. And
I've mentioned before, the first time I ever got called in on the boss's carpet was December of 1980.
Oh.
Working at the Gospel Voice.
Yeah.
And I had delivered a heartfelt tribute, damn near tearful, over the murder of John Lennon. And I got called in on the carpet and told that I'd offended the listeners, and that didn't I know that satanic communist was already in hell.
Well, you know why that was, don't you? In an interview, John Lennon.
Oh yeah, the bigger than Jesus thing, yeah.
Yeah.
The only problem was he was telling the truth.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go.
Well, bigger than Jesus.
I remember. When would this have been? Maybe around 1990 or so. I was working for a temp agency in Kansas City, and I was at Armco Steel. I don't even think Armco Steel exists anymore. They needed somebody who knew how to use a Mac to do documents and different things. So I got hired for that gig. And the company kept bringing me back because they liked my work. But I don't know why I had it on my station. I had a little AM radio that would pick up TV audio from local TV. And for some reason, I had it on the 700 Club.
Where'd you go, Scott?
Now. Hello?
Yeah, now you're back.
All right, well, I'll just hold the phone up to my ear.
Oh, no, maybe... that was just a straight-out lost connection.
Okay. God, I hope this phone's not acting up. I don't need that.
No, it's not. It's Frontier.
Oh. So can
well,
I use it, my
well,
headset
it's
again?
A combination of Frontier and Skype. I mean, it just Skype okay. does that now. Because
well,
it's a Microsoft product.
So anyway, I'm listening to Pat Robertson on the 700 Club with his co-host, analyzing deep dive analyzing the lyrics of the song Imagine, and how horrible and putrid the notions brought about in the song Imagine were, and how antithetical they were to Christian doctrine. And I think they may have said hellish or demonic in their description. It's been some years. But anyway, that's not why I called.
No, it never is.
Oh, I remember. First and foremost, a little bird tells me that our friend Steve in Georgistan is celebrating a special day today.
Yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday? I'm sorry. Well, a day late and a dollar short. So happy birthday to him. I saw his horoscope, and I'm glad. I hope he made it through the day, because it was a weird birthday horoscope for old Steve in Georgistan. It was something along the lines of, all day long, you will enjoy possession of having the Midas touch. Everything you touch will turn into a premium muffler with a lifetime guarantee for as long as you own your car. So I hope you made it through that, because that can get very tricky when you...
Yep, right, and probably a birthday discount coupon from Earl Scheib, where for $99.95 less 25%, they will paint your car Bluebird of Happiness Blue.
Yeah. Well, you know, if this presidency thing doesn't work out for Trump, funny you should mention Earl Scheib. If this presidency thing doesn't work out for Trump, he could open up an Earl Scheib-like establishment. You know, we whitewash any document for $29.99. But I don't know. I think he's going to have other things to worry about. And well, what station were you watching to hear Giuliani yesterday? I think he was on Meet the Press. Is where I saw him.
I saw multiple clips. He made the circuit.
Well, maybe he did that. Who is the guy who was Lewinsky's lawyer, who in one Sunday morning managed to be on each and every one of the Sunday morning political talk shows? God, what was his name? A bearded fellow, I think.
You beat me. No.
Well, somebody will know. But whatever his name was, that became the new way to describe, like, hitting all the talk shows. Well, so-and-so pulled a so-and-so.
Yeah. But, by the way, I ran across a quote from the Mueller redactions that sort of leapt off the page at me.
Yeah.
I thought it was well past interesting. Because for everything that didn't go into the Mueller report, this much made it, and I don't know why members of the House aren't just running around with this tattooed on the back on their foreheads.
You there? You went away.
No, the interruption in the studio.
Oh, the Prince of Pause.
No, I'm not allowed to do this program without being interrupted. This quote, if I wasn't, you know, such a pain sissy that I won't get a tattoo, I'd get this one. The conclusion, and this is a whole sentence, okay? It's a full quote. It's not pulled out of context. The conclusion that Congress may apply the obstruction laws to the president's corrupt exercise of the powers of office accords with our constitutional system of checks and balances and the principle that no person is above the law. What do you think of that?
It's pretty definitive, Bob.
Well, yeah, it is. And... You know what I mean when I say lawyer weasel words, or even journalistic weasel words.
Yeah,
the journalism lawyers. Even if you've got video footage of, you know, some dude sodomizing a skunk, and it's there for everybody to see.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, I was just thinking about Donald Trump and sodomizing a skunk came up, and, well, you know, it just happens.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
There in the newsroom, you're supposed to say, Mr. Trump, who is alleged to have sodomized a skunk.
Yeah.
Okay? You know what word is not in that sentence from Mueller? Alleged.
Yeah.
The conclusion that Congress may apply the obstruction laws to the president's corrupt exercise of the powers of office accords with our constitutional system of checks and balances and the principle that no person is above the law. Unless I'm just reading that really, really wrong, and I went back and found the original location and everything, and I'm not. He didn't say alleged corrupt exercise. That's Robert Mueller, for all he didn't say and all he didn't do. That's Robert Mueller saying plain up, straight out, no weasel words, the President of the United States is corrupt.
Yeah, there's no
and you
other
know
way
what being
to interpret.
And you know what being politically corrupt is also? It is exactly the sort of thing that those 18th century types with their velvet knee breeches and their black shoes with the buckles on them and their powdered wigs and their lacy cravats, it is exactly what they meant when they said treason, comma, bribery, comma, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Political institutional corruption is a straight up impeachable offense. And frankly, I understand the people who want to impeach right now, goddammit. But if you're gonna do this, you've gotta plead it in such a way that every Republican senator who votes to acquit has got to be sending a clear message to the people of the United States that corruption in office does not matter if you are a Republican. You gotta make them own it. You gotta hang that millstone around their neck and let them carry it with them for the rest of their fucking lives, the same way that Orrin Hatch should have to carry the sliming of Anita Hill.
Well, I wasn't even gonna go too much into impeachment, but I saw something over the weekend that kind of gave me pause and served as a springboard for further thought. I mean, deep and profound and meaningful further thought on my part. Because I'm kind of squishy in terms of impeachment. I know that we could probably impeach it via the House, but I'm just not confident that we can convict in the Senate presently. And by the way, hats off to you for laying out that scenario. If all of the different committees and panels in the House are doing their jobs in terms of getting their regular business handled, but also focusing in on their little area of expertise in terms of actions or inactions of Trump in terms of what might be impeachable. If all of the committees and panels and subcommittees in the House exercise due diligence and really do their work, and then we establish how did you phrase it? A House special committee on impeachment. This would be aside from judiciary. This would be like a taking of the temperature, if I understood your point. And the all the information was brought to this, so you know, this special committee or subcommittee, and then based on what they decided, it went to the Judiciary Committee in the House. I think that it could be pretty much a done deal in terms of the activities on the House.
Exactly.
Side.
So let's think of it this way. Congressman Cummings runs House Oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Nadler runs Judiciary.
Grijalva runs Natural Resources. DeFazio runs Transportation and Infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Schiff runs Intelligence. I'm just thinking of the ones I know off the top of my head. Pallone runs energy and commerce. So they all do their work, and then it's time to put together the House Select Committee on Impeachment. Now this is just sort of off the top of my head strategizing, but. Why wouldn't you make, because the speaker's going to get to choose who that would be, assuming there is one. Why wouldn't you make the individual chairs of all of those committees members of that select committee? You see what I'm saying? Oversight and intel and judiciary and so... The select committee, you fill with those vastly experienced chairs, and they in turn put together an impeachment that will be a lead pipe cinch.
Yeah. In other words, you want people who know the material.
Yeah.
In other words.
And you want the people who are best at their jobs, and that's why they got those committee assignments in the first place.
Yeah.
And then on the Republican side... they'll just put Jim Jordan, Steve King, Louis Gohmert, Paul Gosar, and a bunch of other freaks on that side to squeal and bark and swear their undying allegiance to Donald Trump.
Well, we saw
but
it
in, but, in the, but in the end, they won't have any power.
Yeah. Anybody who's interested, who's not old enough to remember or who was old enough to remember, but hasn't thought of it lately, online, I believe it's under PBS, McNeil, Lehrer, impeachment, Nixon should be the keywords to use in your search. You can find...
You know, Auntie Maxine for some of the financial skullduggery. There's Skype again.
I don't know what to say.
It's not you. It's Frontier. It's Frontier and it's Skype, and I'm here and you're there.
But what I was getting at was if you do McNeil, Lehrer, PBS, Watergate, impeachment as the keywords, you can find a link to see all the Senate Watergate testimony video, but you can also see all of the House Judiciary Committee video. And it's highly informative and entertaining even to watch the Republican apologists who were up until almost the very end were defending Nixon and questioning the motives of the Democrats. Nothing really changes in that regard. I mean, I don't think overall we were as divided then as we are now. But we were pretty damn divided even in 1974. And it's really interesting to watch the dynamics and see how much has changed, but also see how little has changed. But what I was alluding to before that I saw over the weekend was a video by a lawyer. He's known as a people's advocate. He's not into corporate law. He's basically into anti-corporate law. He was on Karen Silkwood's legal team back when her family went up against Kerr McGee in Oklahoma in that case back in the 70s. But he's a lawyer by the name of Daniel Sheehan. And there's a YouTube video entitled The Trajectory of Justice in America, and it's a part of a series of lectures, and it's dated April 18th, 2019, and it's a classroom thing. I don't even know the school where he's teaching, but it's like the day that the Mueller report in its redacted form was released, And he talked about, and this was in the early moments and hours of the report being released, and everybody was basically talking from what they knew very, very early on in the release process. And he's going to do another video on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, which is going to delve further into it. But it's worth looking at. Anybody who's interested in whether or not we should launch into an impeachment process, because part of his point was just to show how corrupt Trump is, okay? But another point that he was making, that the Republicans alone don't corner the market in terms of corruption and sameness and not rocking the boatness. And he mentions a few Democrats who he said the difference, and he calls people like OAC and others Justice Democrats, okay, versus traditional, you know, go along to get along Democrats. And he said the Justice Democrats want action and they want it now, goddammit, while the go along to get along Republicans want to continue to research and have hearings and press for full documents release. Toward the end of hopefully never having to deal with this issue. In other words, by the time they're through with their process, it'll be election time, and we can go ahead and get rid of Trump that way. But anyway, his name is Daniel Sheehan, and look on YouTube, look on April 18th, 2019, and you should be able to find the video, The Trajectory of Justice in America. And it really did give me pause as to, you know, what we're dealing with here. It would be bad enough if we were just dealing with Trump and his apologists and his defenders in the Senate and all of that mess. But we've also got Democrats who are not inclined at this point to go where we probably ought to be going. And the other thing he was talking about was, we can chew gum and walk at the same time. We can handle this aspect of the job as we are handling other aspects that we would ordinarily be doing. And by we, I mean, you know, the Democratic House. It's not like this is going to be the sole focus of energy and attention. Why, it will be important and it will be on a front burner, but there's four burners on the stove. And we can multitask, I guess is what he was getting at. So I don't know.
Well, it's in the essence of Congress's job to walk and chew gum.
Well, yeah, that's what we pay them for.
And by the way, alongside that other quote I shared with you, I just got this one from Darlene Scott. She said, I got that beat. On page 220 of the PDF, or page 8 of the intro to volume 2 of the Mueller report, finally, we concluded that in the rare case in which a criminal investigation of the president's conduct is justified, inquiries to determine whether the president acted for a corrupt motive should not impermissibly chill his performance of his constitutionally assigned duties. Doesn't that kind of fly in the face of the basis for the DOJ protocol not to indict a sitting president, asks Darlene? In other words, none of this, i.e. investigation or what it might lead to, i.e. an indictment, should inhibit Trump's ability to carry out his presidential duties. Isn't it an indictment one possible logical conclusion of an investigative inquiry? It damn sure is. And see, that's the funny thing about the whole DOJ guidance is the only way that indicting a president impedes his ability to do his job is once that indictment becomes public. Because as we have been reminded oh so thoroughly by the squealing Republican maggots, grand jury proceedings are secret, especially when they're going on. I'm up speaking. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so the president won't even know he's being considered for indictment.
Well, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that. Pardon me. Daniel Sheehan goes into that, the business of, you know, the notion that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And he kind of tears that apart. He's a pretty sharp lawyer, by the way.
Well, and I mean, I feel pretty confident that we've done a pretty good job here of tearing that apart, because it's something that I dare say that any law student at the end of first semester of 1L, can tear that notion apart. That guidance, that theory exists Tinkerbell-like only because people believe in it.
And isn't the genesis of that from the 70s?
It's no Nixon specifically. It is the fact that Nixon was named in indictments as an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yeah.
And so in the wake of Nixon, probably in the Ford Justice Department, we can't ever do that again because, it's not fair to him. He doesn't get a chance to defend himself. You know, blow me. The president has a bully pulpit, and he is free to get on TV anytime he wants to and say, I'm not a crook. Right?
Yeah.
And by the way, Steve in New York just said, let's cut to the chase here on walking and chewing gum. It's called governing.
Well, that's another word for it.
That's worth a jingle. Steve also wrote what Darlene just wrote. Might this be a message from Mueller to let people know that Mueller had indictment under consideration, but Barr cut it all short, which I think happened? I think that's a distinct possibility. And, you know, I'm the one who said that if he wanted to, he could have said straight out, I'm not allowed to indict this fucker, but by God, if I could, I would. And maybe that's as close as Mueller felt like he could get to saying that.
Now, come May 20th or May 23rd, whenever it is, when Mueller is supposed to appear.
By May 23rd.
Okay. He's been very tight-lipped all through this process. And Trump Barr has already said that he doesn't have a problem with Mueller appearing in a forum such as that and saying whatever he wants to say. How free will he feel to speak? And on the basis of that, what do you expect him to say? Because you know the questions are going to be pretty pointed.
I think that question, and I'm dodging here, but it's going to be an artful dodge. Consider yourself at home. No. Somebody will get that beside you. They just have to. I think it's premature
more,
to ask
please.
That.
Food, glorious food.
Yes, tune in for old Broadway musicals with with Bob and Scott, geezers on the horn.
And my singing abilities are along the lines of yours, Bob. None of us need to be
singular
singing.
Sensation. No. I look terrible in leg warmers.
Well, if anybody breaks into tits and ass, I'm getting out of here.
I think the question is premature.
Yeah.
Because there's going to have to be something in the way of rulings as to what the Congress can see of the redacted material. I mean, if it's limited to asking questions about the unredacted stuff, if I'm Robert Mueller and you know, not even to be a dickhead, but I wrote the damn document, kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
If I'd wanted to add anything, I would have. Because there's that old rule, Scott, about lawyers never asking a question they don't already know the answer to.
Yeah.
And it's
a good rule.
It's best illustrated by the, and this was just one of those examples. I was told that it was real. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But the young, inexperienced lawyer who is, he's a prosecutor, and he's got a witness on the stand, and the witness is the victim of, say, a holdup. and the prosecutor, no, it's the defense lawyer. It's the defense lawyer. He's trying to attack the victim's credibility. Sir, you say you were the clerk that night at the motel when you were robbed. Yeah, I was. And yeah, it's been your testimony, has it not, sir, that you've identified my client as the person who robbed you? Yeah, it's him. Sir, how long would you say the transaction took? Well, he run off, but I'd say about 30 seconds before I pressed the silent alarm. Mm-hmm. So, had you ever seen my client before? No, never before. Well, so you're saying that you were able to make a positive identification of my client in the space of less than a minute, of someone you never saw before? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's him right there. And then the question you don't ask because you don't know the answer to it. Well, sir, how can you say that? It was only seconds. Because he's the only motherfucker that ever put a gun in my face. I ain't never going to forget him for the rest of my fucking life. And your client gets convicted because you asked a question to which you did not know the answer.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure that between now and whenever it is, the cable, and you know what? I've come to refer to them not as news networks. The cable speculation networks will be replete with noble pleaders offering up their best suggestions for how to question Bob Mueller. And maybe, because you want to treat the guy like a friendly, so you're not going to lead him, like on Cross. Maybe the smart money is to say, Mr. Mueller, is there anything that you really wanted to put in the report that you weren't allowed to?
Yeah,
Mr. Mueller, in your own words, did you want more time for this investigation? You had, after all, asked for grand jury extensions.
Yeah.
Those, you know, I'd kind of like to, instead of leading him through yes or no answers, I'd kind of like to see him given an opportunity to wax eloquent. I mean, I'd like to ask him straight up about the passage that Darlene cited and the passage that I cited. Sir, am I reading you correct? Isn't that you saying that the President of the United States is, in your expert opinion, you'd set it up differently. You'd march through. Mr. Mueller, you graduated from law school when? Oh, okay, 50 years ago, yes. Actually, it's probably more like 30, 40. And you've been practicing law all that time? Yes, sir. And you've been a prosecutor how many years? Oh, okay. And you were the head of the FBI? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're familiar with Department of Justice policy? Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Mueller, what do you think, and this would be a dangerous one, Mr. Mueller, what do you think of the DOJ guidance that says that if the President of the United States was captured on video murdering somebody in Lafayette Square Park, and there was no doubt about it, the fact that he had done it. What do you think of the DOJ policy that says that he cannot be either arrested or indicted because he's president? And you cannot, I mean, he would probably run from that hypothetical, but if he answers that hypothetical, there's only one way to answer it. And that is that guidance is ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It is absurd. It's got to go.
Well, see, and I don't think that would at all be a question that we don't already know the answer to, because he didn't come right and out and say it in the document, but he may well have done it because he cited the doctrine or the ruling or the thought process.
Guidance.
Or the guidance. Thank you. You're always good at helping me, understand.
Lo, I have many words.
Yes, and you know them. Yea, verily, you know them. But he did everything but say we would have proceeded in a more serious way, but we were inhibited by this silly notion, silly being my description, that you can't indict a sitting president. I there's stuff still to come out, and
you know that well what
still
I
to be taken.
Right, and so that's why I say that the question's premature, but the other side of it is the person. You don't want just anybody asking that question. You want somebody who has been a prosecutor, preferably a federal prosecutor, someone who has been subject to that guidance. And the way the colloquy would develop would be something like, and who knows, maybe, I mean, it's naked radio. It was a beautiful day, but the tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqué moon and stars and will thee kiss me on the in the dark baby written in glowing dark, the dark paint across and the magic eight ball with the crack with the answer hazy ask it's all right over here.
Mm-hmm.
This may be something we actually hear. So you want someone who has been a federal prosecutor who is familiar with the operation of so-called guidances upon DOJ lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation begins something like, well, you've been one, I've been one. And so you establish that sort of camaraderie of the, siblinghood of the department. And then you say, and of course we all went, we both went to law school and God, didn't those hyperboles or didn't those hypotheticals just make you want to bark at the moon sometime? Well, let's take up a hyperhypothetical. What do you say, Bob?
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, hypothetically, the president, without justification, the president of the United States, with no affirmative defense, just decides to go out one day and take an AR-15 and mow down people in Lafayette Square. And everybody gets it from 17 different video angles. There's no doubt it's him. And on top of it, there's a whole bunch of FBI agents who just happen to be walking around and a couple of DOJ lawyers who work in that jurisdiction. Yeah. Well, so the guidance that says he can't be indicted says that he could not be indicted for murder and that those FBI agents who had just witnessed the commission of a felony couldn't even arrest him, right? Yeah, right. Well, what in the Sam hell is that? I know how much you love the history of Watergate. If you think back to a Sam Ervin, I'm just an old country lawyer from North Carolina, I ain't too smart. And, that's when the Republican Nixon administration witnesses would start to shiver and shake and look like they were dogs trying to pass a peach pit because they knew they's fucked because he started his old country lawyer speech.
Well, and not only that, I think he was Harvard educated, wasn't he? Or Yale?
Yeah.
Sam Ervin was?
Yeah. And what's the, what's that wonderful, wonderful movie? Black and White. Charles Lawton plays, isn't it Charles Lawton? Plays an old Southern lawyer.
Oh, yeah, Advise and Consent.
Advise and Consent. God, I love that movie.
No, he's a senator. He's a Southern senator.
Yeah, he's a senator, but he's a because I think that I'm just an old country lawyer. I think he plays that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus. Mueller will have the benefit. Now, the except for the ranking member and the chairman of the of whatever House panel we're talking about, I think they get 10 minutes, and all the other members of the panel get 5 minutes. the witness doesn't really have a time limit.
No, the clock is not on the witness.
Yeah, I mean,
unless except for the witness's statement.
Yeah, he can wax eloquent for as long as he wants to or needs to. And I just hope that the questions are intelligently framed and skillfully put, and that Mueller will take full advantage of the opportunity, because you know that he has a take on this, and his words were measured in the Mueller report. But I would think that wouldn't he be free to pretty much say whatever he wants within reason and to lay it out?
He can't violate national security.
No, but I mean, within the parameters of good government and responsible citizenship. You know, and that responsible citizenship thing cuts both ways. You know, yeah, you must protect certain things that need protecting.
Well, I'm looking at the Democratic membership of the House Judiciary Committee, and there's a lot of real potential here, but one member just jumps right off the page at me, because I think she's the one to engage in that. I don't even know what I'm even willing to sacrifice my preconceived notions about who should be allowed to ask this question. I mean, I think over in the Senate, the ranking member, Pat Leahy, in Senate Judiciary, if he appears before the Senate, which probably he won't, I'm guessing. But that,
who gets to decide that?
The Republicans.
All of them, or Lindsey, or Mitch, or a combination?
It's probably Mitch. Mitch is Stalin over there, so you know. But that colloquy, even if she doesn't have a history of being a federal prosecutor, that colloquy would be perfect coming from Sheila Jackson Lee.
Yeah. Now, who are the Republican members of that committee? And have they been defending Trump in the press?
Yeah. Here are your the ranking member of House Judiciary is Doug Collins of Georgia. He's a maggot. And this is a blast from your past. You'll remember this guy from the 90s. F. James Sensenbrenner.
Oh, God, I thought he was gone. Of Ohio or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Jesus, that's sack of
doo-doo. But wait, there's more. This is the world's stupidest Ginsu commercial. Immediately below the photograph that I'm looking of the Republican membership of the...
knives that are not sharp and will not last forever.
Ain't cutting a tomato nor a tin can.
Or a fart. Not even a fart.
Butter. Won't cut a fart.
Yeah.
Immediately beneath the photograph of F. James Sensenbrenner is that great noble pleader of somewhere in the general Fort Worth area, Louis Gohmert.
Oh, God.
Are we drinking yet?
No, but I've got my speed dial for my LSD connection.
And then there's Jim Shorts Jordan of Ohio.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, we've already heard from him in recent months.
And
there's another one.
And Matt, DUI is my middle name, Getz of Florida. And I've already heard this clown. I heard NPR give him 15 minutes to blither his idiotic nonsense, and that is Tom McClintock of California.
Oh, yes. He ran in not too long ago. I think he was running for the Senate or some high office here, you know, a statewide office. He didn't get very far. Maybe it was governor. I don't know. It was something that he ran for that we disabused him of that notion in a hurry. Well, one more thing before I go, and I ought to go because I've been all over the map here today. But the list that I sent you of the original states at the time the Constitution was ratified.
Yeah.
I would like someone to run the Scalia test. I wasn't kidding when I sent you that email about the original, you know, approaching it from an originalist approach. I know I use the same word twice, but it's Monday. Count up all those states.
Yeah, and we now definitively have the list.
Okay, but not only count up the representatives, okay, but count up the senators from those 11 or 12 states, I think it is, and find out if two-thirds of that group would convict. And then I'm on board with the Scalia plan, the fat, dead Tony plan.
Well, but if, okay, so that's 26 senators. Now you're going to make me cipher. 26.
No, I hate to do it, but it's to prove a bigger
six
point.
Minus four is two. That would be nine. So you'd have to have 17 senators to convict.
Oh, God, you need eight more?
Nine, really, because it's eight and two thirds. It's still a two thirds majority.
So the then versus now plot points, are we looking at the same basic ratio? Because right now,
yeah, it's the same. It's the same constitutional ratio. It's two thirds to convict.
No, but I'm talking about if you only were to use the original states at the time the Constitution
was ratified.
Right,
two-thirds of 26 is eight and two-thirds.
Yeah, but they're component senators is what I'm getting at.
Okay, well, let's march through that.
Well, that's where it was going.
You got two. Okay, so you got two no votes in Georgia, two no votes in South Carolina, two no votes in North Carolina. You're at six now.
Out of 26.
Yeah. You can't lose more than two out of the rest.
God. Well, let me put on my puffy shirt and three-cornered hat and say we're all...
Republicans are good in... Rhode Island is good. Connecticut's good. Massachusetts is good. I'm not sure about New Hampshire. I know Gene Shaheen is one, but I don't know who the other one is. New York is good. Jersey's good. Delaware's good. Maryland's good. Virginia's good. Pennsylvania. Isn't there a Republican hiding in there?
Yeah, I think.
Well, you're done.
Jesus.
Oh, by the way, my thought on Sheila Jackson Lee. Darlene tells me that she would be perfect. Good one, Bob. Her alma mater is UVA School of Law, the same as Mueller's.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, sometimes I'm kind of proud of myself, the ideas we come up with here. Scott, it's been a great conversation.
It always is, Bob, and you take care and continue to have a good Monday. And my best to Steve and Georgistan the day after. I hope the birthday fairy has dropped a load of goodies on his front step.
I love your choice of words. Of course, today was Agnes's.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday to the warrior princess. Mercy, are you? Have you done anything special, or do you plan to?
No, we'll try to maybe do something tomorrow. We have to be out and about.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll try then. Good. And by the way, Ralph's just popped into the chat room and said, hi, everyone. James Sensenbrenner is my Congress puck. He used to be chairman of that committee, I think. I do believe he was.
Thinking back to his
My father harkened back to his Navy days and used some of the more choice words that he learned while in the service of the United States. Every time James Sensenbrenner showed up in the Clinton hearings.
Oh, I would love to have heard those. Yeah, because nobody cusses. You say you've heard the expression to curse like a sailor? Well, there's a reason that we have that expression. Ay, ay, ay. All right, Bob. Take care of yourself.
I'm going to try. Scott, you be good. Take care, my friend.
All right, see ya.
Bye now. That's our buddy Scott calling from California. Let's see. We have $15 to go to meet Charlene's Sorority of Leans challenge. $15 to go. After that, $85 to finish off the month of April. If we do that tonight, we've got one extra day of fundraising free radio. And that would be awesome in the extreme. So, shall we? Hopefully, yes, maybe. And thanks to everybody who's responded to Charlene's challenge. Thank you to Elizabeth. And thank you to Darlene. And thank you to Ralphs. Got my fingers crossed. Oh, wait. Nope. So we got, no, that was, $15 to go to finish the challenge, 85 more after that to finish April, period. Okay, what do we got here? Oh, good, you're still on the line. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Tell you what I'll do. I'll send you a check for 15, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
I'll put it in the mail the next couple of days.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. That'll finish. Now we do the other 85, and we got April whipped.
Hey, no problem. All my birthday regards to Agnes and to our friend of yesterday. Is it in Georgia?
Yeah, Steve from Georgia. Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned the film Advice, because it. Didn't Otto Preminger direct that movie?
I don't have the particulars up, but it certainly seems like his kind of thing. Let's see.
My internet's been down. I'm sorry. I'm calling sort of out of the blue.
No, that's okay. Advise and consent. And the Google fills in the word movie, so yes. Yep, that's Otto Preminger. Good call, Jim.
Well, you know how he got out of the country, don't you? I mean, he got out of Germany, don't you, or Austria?
No.
Will Bankhead, who was Speaker of the House, and that was the father of Tallulah Bankhead.
Right. Yeah, he was the Speaker, and he was from Alabama, was he not?
Yes, sir. And, of course, I could go on for a long, long time about her. Because she is absolutely one of my favorite people and one of the most outrageous women who ever walked the stage and also one of the most gorgeous.
Well, see, the National Forest in Alabama is named after her daddy. It should probably be co-named after her.
Oh, it should be. And speaking of that, the title of that movie, I had a friend who had to come online to people, and it was, I advise that you consent.
Well, now, yeah, that's a great film. Henry Fonda, Charles Laughton, Walter mm-hmm. Pigeon, Peter Lawford, Gene Tierney, and one of the great comic character actors, Paul Ford. Burgess right. Meredith was in it.
Yep,
it's worth a rewatch.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, good heavens.
God, Frank Sinatra was in it.
Frank Sinatra, what was he in that?
You remember the scene in the gay bar?
But you with me, Ray?
He's playing on the jukebox in the gay bar.
That's right, he was, absolutely. Yeah.
Betty White was in it, Will Gear was in it, Grandpa Walton.
Yeah, Betty White was the senator, and she's extremely a talented lady. She really is. But, going back to this counting up of its votes to convict Trump, that's going to be a real sticky wicket.
Oh, without a doubt.
And did you hear what he said today? I mean, I saw this on the internet before it crashed. He had made the statement that no one disobeys me.
Yeah, well, that that's just another lie. Well, that or you know, he ain't home.
It just proves to me just how close he is. But what he, not only has he crossed the line of insanity, he's well into Russian territory there. That's for sure. He passed that checkpoint, Charlie, a long, long time ago. I don't know where he is now. In the realm of the destructive sphere, he passed into the Marauder sphere when he took the oath, or even before that. But I hate to ask you what you think about things because like I say, I'm sort of out of the blue, and I just took.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not what I think. It's the answers we come up with together that I think makes this unique.
But, you know, what are the real chances? I mean, Trump is going to, he is heading towards some type of abyss and doing something just totally and completely out of any realm of decency or respectability, which he's already done. I don't know how many times he can get a pass through that realm, but I just wonder.
Well, I mean, the mathematics of the Senate, if we take a moment and we assume that the House impeaches, and this is where it gets difficult. This is where it gets dangerous, because while it is absolutely true, and I mentioned it earlier this evening, Lawrence O'Donnell finally caught up with me about, you know, a year, 2 years later, in noting that the Republicans didn't really pay a price after the Clinton impeachment. That's a myth that's been promulgated by the multimillionaire for-profit media, probably to scare Democrats. But,
oh hell, they profited.
But the rules are different, you know. For years and years and years, Jim, we've talked about IOKIYAR.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay if you're a Republican. Right. The messaging machine, the Republican messaging machine, will be cranked up to 11, so to speak.
And
they may win that messaging war. Okay, that's one.
Well, they've got money to do it.
Sure, they do. And as has been pointed out, the Russians have never stopped doing what they've been doing to our electoral process. And in many ways, what we're finding out is that they had a lot of connivance with those shit weasels at Facebook.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So those two things taken together. But I'm very nearly at a point where if they wanted to do this, at least the way I understand it, let the several committees do their work and then marshal all the evidence together in a House Select Committee on impeachment and go from there. I don't oppose that. But I do recognize that there is an inherent risk.
Yes, there is.
And when that thing...
Tell me what... I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, when it goes over to the Senate, that's 67 votes. Okay?
Yeah.
And those 67 votes, well, first of all, you've only got, what, 46, 47 Democrats, and that's counting Bernie and Angus King, too, independents. And then you have to subtract one for Joe Manchin, because Joe Manchin will go vote with the Republicans.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not being a smart ass, Jim. I would bet the deed to this house on it.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, he's
so that means if you're dealing with 45, you've got to come up with 22 Republicans who would vote to convict.
Well, that's gonna be a
that ain't gonna be Lindsey Graham.
No,
it's not going to be Tim Scott from South Carolina. It's not going to be Richard Burr from North Carolina or Thom Tillis from North Carolina. Okay,
well,
it's not going to be the two clowns from Georgia. It's not going to be the one clown from Alabama or the two clowns from Mississippi. I'm up to 9. The two clowns from Louisiana makes 11. The two clowns in Tennessee, 13.
Okay, it is a given that the complexion of the Senate must change, absolutely. And I don't know if we have any chance of that in 2020 or not. I think we have a reasonably good shot of it. I don't know what Elijah Cummings says about
it. I'm just going to say this, Jim. If, and I'm going to be very careful with my language here, you know, because, you know, Sarah Huckabee got all upset when April Ryan said heads have to roll. She told her, "I got, what do you want? Cut my little old pumpkin head off." Right?
One action I'd love to see.
You're making things worse, Jim. But there's an old saying, and I think it comes from Shakespeare, that when you go to kill the king, you dare not miss.
That's true.
Well, when this goes to the Senate, it will be a miss. And I hope there's nobody out there that's harboring the notion that somehow 22 Republicans in the Senate
will vote to convict
are going to grow a spine, or because they know that what they'll be able to do is they will be able to hammer the Democrats by saying things like, "Instead of doing the people's business like they was put there to do, like we would have done if we was in the charge of it, they didn't do it. But us good God-fearing, America-loving Republicans in the Senate stopped them Democrats. And so the only thing you can do is make sure there's less of them in the Senate." And guess what will happen on January the 21st, or January the 20th, 2021, Jim? Donald Trump will be inaugurated for his second term. The House will pass back over into Republican hands, and the Senate majority will get even bigger. And then in the second term, a couple of God forbid, my mouth to God's ears, God forbid, Ruth Bader Ginsburg can't last another four years after this term. And so then you get 6 maggots on the Supreme Court.
Excuse me.
And then maybe Breyer goes. And that's 7. But, you know, sometimes you just, what's that line that Tom Cruise utters in Risky Business? Sometimes you just have to say, "What the fuck?"
Well, that's true. What does Elijah Cummings say about this? I mean, he was sort of on the fence about making.
He said he's not there. As of yesterday, he said he's not there yet, but he's moving toward it.
Well, I put a great deal of stow by what he says. He's not a fool, and he's one of my favorite people, period. And like I say, it doesn't look good, and it's going to be a very, very dark type of battle. Of course, you know, look at it this way. Well, how did it look for Churchill in 1940?
Yeah, but Churchill was only fighting Nazis, not Republicans.
Well, they're the same in my opinion.
Well, they're not. Republicans are stronger and meaner. And they also have, see, there was no Nazi house organ who was in charge of the British airwaves. You know, at best, there was Lord Haw Haw, but he came in via shortwave.
Yeah.
What would it have been for the people of the United Kingdom if they'd gone home every night after the Blitz and turned on the radio and heard, "This is the BBC. The Germans are only bombing us for our own good." You know, that's the equivalent of Fox, Jim.
I know. I've heard recordings of Lord Haw Haw speeches, and it's just amazing. I mean, you know, just like Axis Sally was in the Pacific, or whoever that Japanese woman was.
Tokyo Rose, yeah.
Tokyo Rose. Access Sally, that was another one. But still, I was referring to it was a very dark time for Great Britain in 1940. It was. I mean, they were really in a pickle. They were fighting for their very existence. And, you know, but they had enough spine and enough guts, enough genica, to somehow pull it out of the fire with help and the stupidity on the part of the enemy. I mean, let's face it, what really gave him their chance at life was Hitler invading the Soviet Union. That was it. That really marks his denouement.
Yeah, that was the biggest, you know, not to get all nerdy or anything, but that was the biggest strategic blunder, perhaps in the military history of the West.
Well, he was just crazy.
Had he not started Operation Barbarossa, had he continued to hammer on Britain, Britain could not have lasted.
That's true, and the thing about it, even Barbarossa, I mean, how did he think? And we could get can we get a little dirty here? Not nerdy, but just, you know, going back. I just wonder how he felt that he would be able to hold on to all that territory.
Well, because he was convinced that, you know, he was Trumpian in that regard. He felt like he had a very big brain and, you know, all the best words. He was going to do, because it was a gauntlet thrown down before him, he was going to do what Napoleon could not.
All right, and he wanted to establish his baseline at the Urals, correct?
Right.
That's where he wanted, that would be the line, and that's where, that in other words, that's the hunk of Russia he wanted to take and keep. But it's one thing to invest a country that size, it's another thing to keep it. And people need to realize, when they go to take something, they better know how to keep hold of it, because it doesn't last that long unless you have some awfully good fortune.
Yeah, well, I know probably somewhere along the way you've played a game or two of Risk, haven't you?
Yeah.
Remember the board game Risk?
Well, yeah, I do. God, I haven't played that in years.
Oh, I love it. In former years, you know, you start, you need a good four or five. You need at least five people playing to make it really cutthroat. But there's a rule of thumb that if you can take and hold Europe for three turns, you've got the game won. Something like that, because it's globally, you know, in terms of geography, it's the linchpin. But
exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, holding is different than conquering. And frankly, wow. Now we're in the weeds. Alexander learned that where? Afghanistan.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he marched all the way up to the Caspian Sea. And the Battle of the Oxus River.
Yeah,
he won.
Sure did.
But as soon as he left.
As soon as he died at a very early age, it went to the successor generals, and they became called his Alexandrian Empire. It was the successor state. I mean, one went to Ptolemy, who got Egypt. Hence, you have that dynasty in Egypt that produced Cleopatra, and then you have others. I don't know who else got from the other three parts of his empire. But, I mean, building an empire is one thing. But keeping it is another.
Well, and it's in the nature of empire that empires always fall.
Exactly.
The minute you got one, you know someday you're not gonna.
Well, exactly. It's always a temporary thing. That's all there is to it. But the thing about it is, in this political situation that we have, I think it could be. I just predict. Now, I don't have on my gown with stars and moons on it. Now, you know, that's the one that you've got. It's got that tear in it.
Yeah. And Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby, written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front. Yes.
There you go. But even as dark as it seems, I think Trump I just predict that he's going to do something that's going to really destroy a lot of his support. I hope that he will.
Well, if Jim, I'm not being a smartass, but if you figure out the because it was while you were away from being able to listen, but we had a conversation about that one night, and we struggled mightily in this community to figure out the thing that Donald Trump could do that would make his voters abandon him.
Well, he could die. You know, something could
happen. But you mean peacefully and naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then his power, his fan base would just transfer over to precious Ivanka. Seriously. I think what one of the things we came up with would be actually be seen engaging in sex with another guy.
Who, Trump?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Well, no, that would probably turn the maggots.
Well, they'd probably say it was a big lie, and you know, it was something that was.
Fully. I'd say probably 20% of the American electorate would say, well, he's just helping make homosexuality great again.
There you go. Well, I think we could count that one out. I think the best stakes are if physically he should become incapacitated, and you know.
Well, who's gonna tell us that? Who's gonna tell us that?
Well, I've seen it ever since day one.
Yeah, but if he should become incapacitated, Jim, that triggers the 25th Amendment.
Well,
but the only way the 25th Amendment is triggered is if someone reports his incapacity.
Well, Bob, I think that's self-reporting. All you have to do is just look at the man.
No, it's not. Go read the text. There's nothing self about it. Somebody has to take an affirmative step. It's like when, when Reagan was shot under the 25th Amendment, George H.W. Bush became acting president.
Yeah, when he was under the anesthesia.
And every time he went in to get the steel eel, looking for all those polyps he was growing, George W. Bush, during the time that he was non-compos mentis, Reagan, that is, became acting president. And, you know, the same thing with anything that requires you to be knocked out, the vice president becomes acting president. But in a case of incapacity, remember, the 25th Amendment occurs not just because of the assassination of Kennedy and the heart attacks of Eisenhower. The prime driver of the 25th Amendment was the incapacity of Woodrow Wilson. And everybody knew he was incapacitated.
Well, his wife was incapacitated.
But Edith Wilson wouldn't let anybody anywhere near him to formally confirm it.
Well, I think things are a little more visible now than they were then.
They're a little bit more immediate because of electronic media.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it was easier then to conceal infirmity than it is now.
But look at melanoma as an example, Jim.
But what is about her? I don't understand this, and please help me out here. I don't see anything attractive about that woman. I don't see anything presidential. I don't see anything but a slut.
You're talking about his wife, not his daughter, right?
Well, either one. I don't see anything about any of them that could make themselves that attractive to the American electorate.
Oh no, the Republicans are already talking about making Ivanka. They're already talking about her presidential ambitions, and the thing is, so is she.
His daughter?
Yeah.
See, I had to keep you up.
The point that I was going to make, Jim.
I'm out of my depth here.
Well, some months back, I guess it was last year, really, melanoma disappeared from public sight for weeks. She wasn't seen. And it was reported that she had gone in for a kidney procedure that is outpatient and nobody ever goes to the hospital for and has almost no recovery time.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then, lo and behold, when she did come out in public, she had size double D kidneys.
Well, that's not exactly a harbinger of good news and better health now, is it?
And
I don't.
That was a joke, Jim. Double D kidneys.
I know that.
And every time she raised her eyebrows, you could see her garter straps move under her dress.
Keep it up.
At this point in time, the difference between her and the Melania in Madame Tussauds is the fact that the one in Madame Tussauds is actually lifelike.
You're right there. I mean,
apparently they're the lovebirds are squabbling. People magazine reported today that they had a spat while they were down at Mar-a-Lago. Melania was upset, and they had words with each other over something, a source told People. The spat, which reportedly occurred in front of other people, happened on March 30th. And her spokescreep, Stephanie Grisham, said, "Well, that's just not true."
You know, this is how out of my depth I am. I didn't even know that People magazine still was in publication. That's just how isolated I've become, I guess, really. And when you guys get together, you start counting numbers and making projections of this, that, and the other. I'm truly out of my depth.
It's a fun parlor game.
And all I can do is hope for the best that I. And I just think that he will do something so terribly outrageous because he's really tottering. I mean, for example, this country is really frightened by another thing. Did you see 60 Minutes?
I did not.
Sunday evening? Well, they were going to the Russian hackers and what they've done to all the banks and people all over the world. I mean, the former Soviet Union or the former Russian Republic is now a great big syndicate of organized crime. And they've got one hacker who lives somewhere in the palatial Mount Palace on the Black Sea with a spotted Bengal cat and a coat to match it that is wanted by the FBI for $3 million. And we tried to get their cooperation in getting some of these hackers. And what the godfather over there does, Putin, when we go after somebody, shit, not only will he not let us have them, but he puts them on the payroll as far as his computer hackers are concerned. I mean, I had no idea of just how large their electronic empire is and what they've been able to do. I mean, people from our computer people from here, our computer experts at, oh, Lord, help me out here. Not only Windows and who is in charge of that particular computer organization?
Well, that's Microsoft.
Okay, Microsoft. People from Microsoft. They have a special unit that's working out with the FBI, and they've been able to track down some of these people. And, of course, you know, it's kind of hard to do when you don't have cooperation from a rogue state like the Russian Republic or the Russian mafia fiefdom. That's exactly what the whole thing has become. And, of course, they want Trump to stay in there because everything he does is right exactly what Putin wants. I mean, the bigger ass he makes of himself, the more divided he makes this country of itself, the more it is to his advantage and his gain for the time being. Because Putin can't last forever either. I mean, none of them can. But as far as fighting these things are concerned, and I don't know the solution to it, all I can say is to vote and hope that maybe something is going to happen. you might call it a miracle or a miracle, that's what it's going to take, that could bring Trump down, or that daughter of his. I don't know. I just don't know the family that well. I haven't kept up with them because I've had other personal battles of my own that have sent me from that field of conflict, if you know what
well,
I mean.
Well, sure, and have certainly put things into perspective.
Yes, they have. And by the way, I want to tell you, I really enjoyed Friday night.
Oh, it wasn't that. Wasn't that? That was a blast.
It was a lot of fun for me. You'll never know. It was sort of a reaffirmation of a lot of things because I haven't really spoken except one time in the hospital, and the only thing people will ever remember me for in the audience is Mr. Butt Whistle. You know that.
No, Jim, you've been at it for far too long. People will also remember the bong with the electric aquarium pump and the stirrups.
Oh my Lord. Like I say,
I keep thinking I'm going to walk into the head shop over in Fayetteville one of these days and see one of those little bastards, but they haven't come up with one yet.
Those were some good old times, let me tell you. By Lord, it's a wonder I remember.
I mean, you put your feet in the stirrups there and push the button on the aquarium pump, and by God, if you don't have a cowboy hat on, you don't.
Well, you felt like you were just going straight through the wall behind you, that's for sure. I mean, it could really get you there quickly. And a kaboom, you know, really, it would be, you know, I'd truly be like Alice in Wonderland. That's what they used to call me. Oh, my God, here comes Alice. She is truly in Wonderland. So, I would be so completely blasted out of my gourd. I didn't know if I was coming or going. And the only other thing I can compare that to is when a friend of mine brought all these brownies over. He didn't tell me, but they had put a whole pound of pot in those damn things. And I ate more than I should have. And after a minute and I started to get off, I said, oh, my God, what have I done to myself?
And, and see, Jim, that's the thing. That was back in the day with a much weaker strain. The stronger strains that are out there now.
Oh, it'd kill me, probably.
You got people who are like, you know, I never smoked the marijuanas, and they'll go out to a legal state and they'll get an edible, and they'll eat a handful of gummies, or they'll eat a whole cookie. Ooh. And I forget who it was, but somebody wound up in the hospital thinking they'd OD'd on the marijuanas. No.
Well, I mean, you know, like we used to say in my day, the common axiom was, I guess if you got a place to sit down, don't have to go anywhere tonight.
Look for a soft place to land.
Exactly. But, it has gotten more potent and more powerful. And, you know, well, what can you say? I mean, it's a new industry, and, you know, I think it's a good thing that cannabis is becoming legal because it has so many other problems.
Well, I'm still waiting for that miraculous day that's said to be in the offing, July 1st, when the medical law takes effect here in West Virginia, but you won't be able to smoke it.
That's so stupid.
Oh, it's dumber than a head and a hog is in the ass. You can take it in a pill form. You can have a tincture. Maybe you can vape it, but, you know, just to get a bag of lovely little buds, nope, not going to be legal, because Jesus.
Let's face it now. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. And they don't like the idea of putting all the smoke in your lungs. That is not good for you. I don't care what anybody says. It's not, and I still smoke. I couldn't. You hear the results when I have to take my mouth away from the mouth of this telephone. But, yeah, there are a lot of things on the rise today, and I don't have any real intelligent conversation to add to. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, other than we have a certain amount of blind hope, and if we have to take a calculated risk, then we have to take it.
And that's the ultimate question, Jim. Is a guaranteed failure a calculated risk?
I don't know. I don't think it is. And that's one reason the logic comes.
No, I think a guaranteed failure is a guaranteed failure.
Well, that's true.
There's no risk. There's no risk. There's no risk involved in something that you know you're going to fail at out of the gate.
That's just totally logic, and you're really just stirring baggage when you do that, or as they would say, just jack it off. I mean, you know, why bother? But as far as Trump, I don't know. I don't know anything about his family, so I'll just have to repeat that.
The other side of that coin, Jim, is that if I'm sitting here on January the 20th, 2021, watching that no good pissant POS, the best part of whom ran down his mother's leg, get inaugurated for a second term, I'm going to be a really unhappy individual.
Well, so will I. If I'm around then, I certainly hope I am, but who knows. But let me end my little addition to this program about a few Tallulah stories, if you don't mind, okay?
Sure.
Well, you know, Tallulah got real upset the fact that nobody was coming to see her anymore, and she had built a pool at her estate in New York called Windows. And so she would walk around the pool stark naked. She did not give a damn who in the hell saw her or whatever. And one of her guests made a comment about, Tallulah, what is that odor? She said, oh, Dolly, I fought it. But I don't always smell like this. And the other one was about Montgomery Clift. You know, there was a lot of stuff that was circulating in Hollywood about his sexuality and his being gay and all this, that, and the other. And so they were canvassing people in Hollywood. And they got around to Tallulah. And they said, do you think that he is gay? And she said, well, darling, I can say this. He never sucked my cock. He sure did. She sure did. And, but you know, in her days, throughout her career, she was really one of the most beautiful women in the world. I mean, she had a gang of lesbians in England called the Gallery Girls, and you better not transgress on Tallulah with them, because I'll tell you one thing, you might not come out of that one alive. I mean, she was widely popular, widely talented, and everything she did, the Little Foxes. Remember when she played Regina Gibbons?
Yeah.
The role she played in that? And then, of course, there's Connie Porter in Lifeboat. I mean, when the movie opens, here's Tallulah in a lifeboat, and she's wrapped in this beautiful fur. Her hair is not a hair is out of place. And she's sitting there with a typewriter and a big diamond bracelet. And it was just incredible how, you know, how that whole movie. Have you seen that movie? Have you seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. Lifeboat, yeah.
Well, you know how Hitchcock made the oil, made the fog, don't you? He used oil, some kind of oil chemical to make it, and just about killed everybody on the set. They almost died after they got off that thing. So that was a tough movie to make. But it was a good film.
Well, I'm fond of her because we share a common birthday.
Really?
Yeah. She was born 59 years before me. No.
Well, she was certainly something
60,
else.
61 years before me.
She and her sister Eugenia were two just beautiful women. Honestly, truly, they were just, you don't see that kind of beauty too much anymore. You really don't. And even as she matured, she was just an incredibly gifted actress. And she played all kinds of strange roles, even there toward the end. I'm going to put her up there with Joan Crawford, who's also one of my favorites, as you well know. But I just thought I would share about Tallulah and the fact that her father saved Otto Preminger and a number of other people because of her influence on him, because Will Bankhead didn't care that much for those people. But they were people that Tallulah cared for, and what Tallulah cared for, he cared for. And he put a lot of her, she had a lot of influence over him to do a lot of good things, particularly when it came to saving Jews and other people, artists and things. that Hitler was going to devour had they not escaped or able to gain access into this country.
And I'm just looking at looking up some. Her last words were codeine, bourbon.
Yeah, she had her addictions. That's for sure. Well, you know, when the war started, she said she was going to give up drinking and started. How long that lasted, but then she got hooked on aspirin or something. I don't know. But there's one word that can characterize a lot of the way she behaved and some of the stuff she said, which is priceless, and that is truly and completely outrageous. As a matter of fact, I think I've almost in a certain way tried to be like her myself, but I'll never, of course, talk about and, of course, that would never be. But, you know, I think being outrageous sometimes definitely has its place. I really do. Particularly if it's directed toward a good end and not something that's bad. But I wish all you people out there a very good week to come. Mr. Scott, I heard you and Scott going back and forth about this, that, and the other, about the numbers and things.
God bless. God love her. Harry Truman invited her to his inaugural parade, and when the South Carolina float came by with Strom Thurmond on it, she booed him from sitting right next to the President of the United States. She booed Strom Thurmond.
She couldn't stand him. She could not stand him at all. No, you're right there. I mean, she was an incredibly smart woman. I mean, she had her affectations and she had her outrageous episodes, and she drank her share of bourbon and I'm sure took a number of codeine pills and stuff like that. But bless her heart, when she finally got sick, I think she died in 1968, and she got the flu, and that's what carried her off. I think it was that flu epidemic of 68.
There was a flu involvement. Right. Well, Jim, I got to get out of here, but it's been good talking to you, my friend.
Well, you take care, and all my best to everybody. And again, wishing your spouse a happy birthday, and our friend in Georgia. I hope you had a good one yesterday.
Well, you just got a well wish from Lady B. Lady B says, it's good to hear from Scott in San Diego. And, of course, Jim, I'm so glad you're home, Jim, and able to call in on the regular. I wish you continued energy and will always hope for the best for you.
Well, Lady B, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. As they say, from the balls of my feet to the bottom of my heart, I do. I sincerely do.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
You too, sir, and have a good week. And let's hope maybe things will start to get a little less threatening, and we may have a little light coming through those dark clouds.
All right. You take care.
Yes, sir. Bye.
All right. Bye now. It's our buddy Jim back on the mend and back home. Lady B with a little bit more to her note on the way out the door, and thank you very kindly to Charlene, who followed up her challenge with let me pull it up here. With the challenge having been met, an extra $50 for the Happy Birthday Agnes portion of the evening's challenge. So thank you very, very kindly, and that leaves us in wonderful shape, because between that and Roberto and Jim finishing things up, we finish at $20 to finish the month of April. So that is tremendous. Lady B says, also, happy birthday to Agnes and Scott in Georgia. Georgia Stan, many more to the both of you. And then into the meat of the message. Anyway, as far as Trump and impeachment, I want him impeached, but it looks like it's not going to happen. Because we're going to pursue the right and legal way, and Trump will still die as the 45th legal president, and the country will continue to die. So fuck it then, Dem leaders. Do whatever you need to do. I know you know better, Bob, but I've had it. They're going to have to recruit more voters now because I'm done with the Democratic Party and their prevaricating. I'm voting for Bernie if he runs independent or whoever does. I'll get radical. And it doesn't matter how I vote because the other side will always have a say and their voices will always be acknowledged no matter how unreasonable they may be and harmful to the country it will be. Right now, I'm done. Maybe I'll feel better tomorrow. But anyway, throw you a 10 on Friday. Thanks for everything you do, darling. Thank you, Lady B. And I understand. I'm gonna take a couple of minutes and just try to maybe make some sense out of this, not for y'all but for me. I'm a real hard ass about the Constitution. It is possible to see it as a living document, and at the same time understand that there are some bedrock principles that you do not violate if you want it to go on being the Constitution. Baltimore Bob put it, LBJ let Nixon slide in 68. I think it's fair to say that that Watergate would have slid had it not become utterly impossible for it to so do. Ford got away with doing something that had never been done in the history of the United States. And that set the stage for Reagan. And Reagan set the stage for H.W. Bush and Bill Barr. And they set the stage for W. Bush and Count Dicula. And they set the stage for Trump. And the only impeachment in the midst of the whole thing, and with what I said earlier, I stand by it, is Congress's prerogative to do. And it cost, again, it cost the Republicans precisely nothing. They held on to the House. They held on to the Senate. They got the presidency by hook and by crook in 2000 by tarnishing Clinton. They made sure that Al Gore would be scared off from using Clinton's star power to campaign in 2000. He felt like he was doing something intelligent by nominating Joe fucking Lieberman as his running mate, thinking that somehow that was going to deliver Florida. How'd that work out? Because Lieberman had been such a public scold of Clinton, that was supposed to balance the ticket. And now we got Trump. And I want the fucker impeached. And maybe. I mean, is that okay? I'm not, that's not rhetorical. I want to know. Write to me overnight, whatever. Is it okay if by impeaching Donald Trump and never being able to remove him, and that won't be the Democrats' fault, that'll be Republicans' fault in the Senate, if by impeaching him and not removing him and thus empowering him, we get him a second term in office? Will we say, hey, we did right by the Constitution, at least in the House? Because I don't think there's any way to make a senator in Louisiana or two in Mississippi or one in Georgia or one in South Carolina or one in North Carolina or one in Tennessee or one in Kentucky. I don't think there's any way to really make them pay until you change the hearts, fuck their minds, until you change the hearts of the states in which those monstrosities live. But if we at least impeach him, can we wrap ourselves in the comfort of saying, when the Constitution was under threat, we did what the Constitution demanded? I don't know. I don't know whether I would rather have power or the knowledge that we had done the right thing. I wish I had that knowledge. But I'm not as convinced as maybe Lady B is that the Democrats won't pursue impeachment. and I know that there's no taste at all for 11D-dimensional chess. But if Nancy's out there, saying, you know, I don't think he's worth it, isn't there a chance that what she's saying is prove me wrong? If Elijah Cummings and Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler and other chairs of other committees come to her and say, look, we can't blink at this. I mean, it seems like Schiff is pretty solid. Nadler's getting there. Cummings says he's getting there. What's she going to do? Deal with a palace revolt? Take their gavels away? I think it's worth considering. Arnold, with a note a little bit ago, just to wrap things up. Why must we suffer a Republican House and Senate if that is not what a majority of the country wants or needs? We need to be blasted into a progressive liberal direction right away. Well, it's because the country does not vote as a whole on each individual member of the House and each individual member of the Senate. And it looks like Louis Gohmert and Mo Brooks, less brains, are going to go. I mean, people like that, Sensenbrenner, and even some of the ones that are sort of backbenchy, they're going to go on being Republican members of the House as long as they want, or at least as long as their districts are gerrymandered so that they are forever protected. It took an extraordinary effort to get Doug Jones in, even with a candidate who demoralized his own party. I don't think there are any rock-solid lead pipe cinch answers here. My only suggestion is let the committees do their work. And then let the committees go to Nancy and say, Madam Speaker, this is unavoidable. My two cents. So that's it for this Moran Monday. It's nice how Moran Monday moves into Titanic Tuesday, because some of our Morans, they'll keep. And we'll get to them tomorrow. Including, I hope, a bit of a musical interlude that will probably make us all eat dirt and run rabbits. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thanks to all of our subscribers. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. For 20 years, leading the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. If on this Earth Day you think that maybe you'd like to support somebody who works in the trenches on those issues relating to climate change and environmental justice, I can't think of anybody better to support than Coal River Mountain Watch. Okay? And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.